26. I'll ask Councilman Bell to read our mission statement.
Yes, our mission statement is to provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Longo? Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Dudikoff?
Here. Councilman Longo has called in earlier to his emergency work that he's doing, so he'll be excused. Quorum has been established. This time, please join Councilman Nicholson as we do the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Welcome to all our visitors this evening in the chambers and online on Zoom. Thank you for being here this evening. I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda.
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson and second by Councilman Luby. Does the council have any objections? Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. Approval of the previous meetings. I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the regular meeting on March 12th and the special meeting on March 18th.
I move to approve minutes of a previous meeting, March 12, 2024, and a special meeting on March 18, 2024.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle and second by Councilman Nicholson to approve the minutes, previous minutes of March 12th and March 18th, 2024. Hearing no objections, the proposed minutes are approved. Next item on our agenda is reports. First on our list is the February financial report. And I'll turn this over to City Manager Homka.
Thank you, Mayor. As we have committed just recently, we wanted to make sure that we put the financial reports to council on the second agenda of every month. Included in your packet, you can see how we have been doing, how we're tracking as we're moving towards the end of the fiscal year. If you have any specific questions about tonight's report, I'm happy to call up our finance director, Patricia Soule.
Do we have any questions on the financials? February? Are you hearing that? Move on. Well, next we have the city manager's report. I'll turn this over to City Manager Homka.
Trying to get to the spot here. Thank you. So tonight, among the other things that are on my manager's report, I wanted to draw your attention to four things. The CPRG EPA grant that we anticipate receiving a grant. This is the grant that we're putting in for the pollution reduction uses and to help solve our immediate need for wind or our immediate need for electric power and generation and a long-term power to address geothermal. As it stands now, we're putting in for $50 million to drill and test that well on the resource and putting in for some wind turbines and also a BESS system to unite all of it together. We're also in the amount of activity that the team has been doing with grants. I think we have about 20 active Is that the number I have? 20 grants, and we had about 20 people show up for a coordination meeting at the library, because almost every department has an idea or has been looking for ways to help meet some of the needs of our community. But we really have not established a very good tracking system, so we met to just at least go over where the grants are, what we have out, what has been, you know, a decision made, yay or nay, and how to move forward. The DMV is experiencing an issue, and I've been aware of this for a few weeks and thought that perhaps a few weeks ago, I thought it was fixed. And I have to correct, I have the wrong four-letter acronym for our union. The ILWU has worked with myself in tandem to try and approach the state to let them know some of the problems we have. And that has been very helpful. And I can call out Travis Swangle specifically for helping task this for me. You know, we have been working with the state on the gates for the airport. Water isn't getting very far. We're trying to get those replaced. And this issue that we've had with being, at first we were kind of stuck with using an older Telalaska line for the state's connection to our remote site here, where they do the licenses and public safety. We thought we had fixed this by getting approval to connect using fiber, but now there's still something happening. And it's like, I tell everyone, it's like trying to discuss a problem with, you know, Bill Gates and Elon Musk. It's beyond me, and I need to get both of these entities in the room so we can prove what's wrong with the connection. Is it the equipment? What is happening? And I'm hoping to get that at least set up a meeting between both entities as soon as possible. So hopefully by the end of this week, I'll have some movement on when that will occur. Because now they're saying it's us, and we've connected everything and tested everything as we know possible. So more on that, hopefully at the next meeting. And then I'm happy to report that we will be bringing out a candidate for the Director of Public Utilities. That's the week of April 15th. And I look forward to meeting him personally, and you will all be receiving information about the candidate and when you can meet him and some arrangements that are being made. Happy to answer any other questions in my report, if you have any.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Councilman Coleman?
Just on your position openings, as one of your bullet points, on city engineer position be discontinued, replaced with project manager. Are those both Title III positions? And if we're replacing a city engineer, what are we going to do with the city engineer?
That's a good question. Thank you. Based on usage of the city engineer in the past, we still have a city engineer on contract. And we're using that person currently. And I'm trying to think of his name. Oh, gosh, it slipped my mind. Tom Regan. Thank you very much. It's kind of amazing I can forget that, because he's been a fixture down there for years. However, using an engineer for a stamp, which is what you really pay for, having a professional engineering stamp, our last engineer only used it once. What's really happening is our permit technician has been functioning as a project manager. And so we really want to realign those positions. Believe that they are all Title III. So that's was included in our Title III study. That's where you see the additions of those titles. And we also have a student intern who's been down there functioning on a temporary, temporary basis as the permit technician. And that's one that we got through, I think he was an intern for public utilities, maybe one, possibly two summers. And that's one of the intern positions that I transferred from planning, because I had that funded and we didn't have the need for an intern that year. So I've loaned that position out sometimes. And I think I addressed that a little bit in our position report here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions on the city manager report or comments? Councilman Luby?
On the grants, I'm just curious. So the individual departments that are looking for grants, are they also managing those grants? Are they doing the reporting, or does that fall on administration or finance, or Once we receive the grant, who manages it and does all the reporting for it?
That is part of the problem. I mean, I think we have done very well, but each, for example, finance department has the financial obligation to make sure that we're doing it well and are making the draws and reports, but that's really not what they're there to do, especially if it's not a grant that's tied with our CMMP, for example. So each department is more or less responsible to make sure that the administration of that grant, in between where the finance department's obligations start and everything else before that. And we really want to have that system worked out. How should it be? There are some that I think that are germane to, enough to each department that they wouldn't change. But some of the other ones that we see and we're trying to pair up with the CMMP and those obligations, we really want to have a process down pat for how those come. We could have one or two possibilities for a grant. You know, I can remember sitting around the director's table and never having a discussion about maybe an opportunity from the Denali corporation. It could be used maybe at ports as a match, or it could be used for one of our civil projects as a match. How do you make that determination? And it's only fair to include everyone. What's the best use of that? So there's quite a few things we need to look at rather than me just making, you know, a decision that may not include everyone in determining the best use of those opportunities. So it's kind of broad in a sense, depending on the opportunity. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I was just mostly just curious of who is managing it, and, you know, because it's important, you know, once you get it, it's a lot of work.
True. And some require more management than others.
Right.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Tungle and Councilman Bell.
Yeah, how are we doing on the duck base dredging the data collection? On the, how are they doing? Where are we on it?
I can call Peggy McLaughlin, our ports director, up. It's my understanding that we're doing the bathymetry. I like that big bonus word for Scrabble.
Yeah, they're doing a whole host of side sonars and scans and some bathymetry work. I know they got snookered last week with weather issues, and then we had to time some stuff around vessels. So I have not had an update this afternoon where they're at. So sorry, I don't have more information for you.
Thank you, Peggy.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Bell.
On the subject of the grants here that you have in here, could this be leading to somewhere down the road where we have a single person that is overseeing these grants, and you know, could that potentially be a new position? Is that a direction you might be heading in? And you know, obviously there would be financial implications for that.
Correct, Councilman Bell. It is leading to that, and one of the ideas that I've discussed before, but I've certainly talked about with our planning directors, Cameron Dean was our GIS administrator, and he spent a long time making sure all of the databases and data sets and everything was set up. However, for the time being, he can probably do what needs to be done for that, at least for maintenance purposes, and his job as director. He has more skills in that than I ever would have had, and was not a GIS proficient person. So I'd like to use that position, if we can, to fill that position with a grant administrator or manager, whatever the word would be. However, I don't have a job description for that yet. There's nothing yet to even bring and kind of advertise. We're looking to our Title III Wage and Compensation Study Group for some of that information. What would a range be, et cetera? It wasn't included in the Title III comp report. I noticed that I neglected to put that in towards the end of that report. And I thought I'd been talking about this for months, and I didn't ask them for it. So they're providing that for us as soon as possible. And that's my strategy for the time being. But ultimately, seeing how that works, it should pay for itself in a way. I mean, we usually don't draw admin funds. We put those funds into the project. So depending on the source, we could draw admin funds and probably pay. Some of these are very big grants because the entire community, the entire city is using GIS. So it's not a good long-term viable strategy to keep that position out of play in terms of the GIS administrator. But for right now, We might be able to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comment, questions for city manager? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, next we've got Parks, Culture, and Recreation Advisory Committee minutes and meetings of January 22nd, 2024, included in your packet for information. No presentation will be provided for this. If you have any questions, must be somebody here from PCR. Any questions, comments? I guess you got off that one, Roger. Thank you. Next, we'll move on, and this is you're up here for community input and announcements. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium. Use the microphone, state your name. Thank you.
Thank PCR. You. Roger Blakely, PCR director. PCR has multiple volunteer opportunities available. And for students, for the UCSD students that need some volunteer hours, we really can't run all our programs without volunteers. And right now, we really like to have you come and do some timing for our swim program. And so if you think about it and like to get some volunteer hours, or if you just want to volunteer and help us, we really appreciate it. Easter is coming. Easter egg hunt will be on March 30th at Sitka Spruce Park. There'll be age groups, and it starts at 12 and it ends at 2, but there's age groups throughout that time frame. And please check the flyer out or our app to see what age group that you'd like to bring your children in. Lastly, we're ready for the spring festival. It'll be April 6th. And at the spring festival will be, you know, regular stuff where we'll have a showcase artwork and we'll have vendors. We're going to have a lot of music at this festival this time. A lot of people are going to participate in the music. But we're also going to have at the beginning, as you enter in the spring festival, Barry Dunn and Associates. And those are the people that are going to be working on our park master plan. We'd like everybody to stop at their table. We'd like everybody to give comments, their ideas about the community, about what they'd like to see at recreation. And that will start our master plan process that will eventually come back to council at some point along the way. Anyway, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Roger. Museum.
Good evening. Virginia Hatfield with the museum. Mention a few of our programs. We have trivia this Thursday at 6:30 on 89.7 and Channel 8. Please join us. Also wanted to mention that we have a new film in our permanent gallery. It's from the Aleut Corporation, and it's called Against All Odds. So we hope you'll come and check out our new film. And we are having an event April 12th. It's called Piercing the Aleutians, and it's going to be a miniature exhibit up front, and it's going to feature Alaska Native jewelry. So it's called Piercing the Aleutians. So it'll be jewel earrings, and we're going to have some librettes from the collections. All Alaska Native artists are invited to submit. We have some applications at the museum. We can email them to you if you provide us with your address. I think we need the jewelry, you know, by April 6th, if possible. The opening is April 12th. It'll be from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Museum of the Aleutians. We're going to have the dance group Alulam Ahanan perform, and there will be an online auction that the auction will end and the exhibit will end. The auction ends May 11th, and people can come in on Mother's Day or the day before Mother's Day and pick up any jewelry they've won. So some of the items that are being put into the show will be donated to us for auction or on sale by the artists, and then some will just be for show. But you can pick up anything you've purchased and take it home for Mother's Day. And the exhibit will end May 12th. And then we have a lunch and learn on April 20th. That's going to be with Josel Hale in the community room at the library. She's our new collections manager, and she's going to talk about metalworking, something that she's done a lot of work in. And then we're going to have a summer raffle that you'll see pop up that will end June 27th. The drawing will be June 27th. That'll have an original painting by Boucher, I think it's the last name. And it'll have a couple of cash prizes, $200 and $100 cash prizes. And that's all we got going on. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
I'm Lynn Crane. I don't see Catherine here tonight, so I just want to say on behalf of the CVB that their wine tasting is coming up on April 27th, so everybody should mark their calendar for that. I'd like to remind everybody about the Unalaska Interagency Cooperative, which meets every fourth Thursday at noon in the library conference room. It's an informal group of folks from various agencies and entities in town that come together to talk about what's going on in our programs and community trends and opportunities for collaboration and upcoming trainings. It's kind of a different meeting than any other meeting, and you might learn things there that you don't learn anywhere else. So I'd really encourage you to come sometime. It's this Thursday at noon. And then, of course, we are getting ready for our first live and in-person soup off in 5 years. We're very excited about it. The community, as always, has been incredibly generous to us. We're getting our auction items and our door prizes sorted right now. We'll have a live auction and a silent auction. There's the categories and the cost to get in. Categories of soup this year are soup, stews, and chilies, which is the general category. Second category is seafood. Third is vegetarian. Fourth is copycat recipes. Fifth is world flavors. Entry fee or admission price is the purchase of a USAVE membership. It's not a very expensive event to attend. Even if you don't feel like bidding on a bunch of stuff because we know money is tied all over, we really hope people will come and just enjoy the food and enjoy being around their neighbors and friends. I promise you'll have a good time. If you have any questions, please call us at 581-1500. And we really hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Chambers? Announcements?
Mayor, I'll be handing out each council member's tentative schedule for the meet and greet with Barry Dunn, for the PCR master plan. And if you could just jot down what time slot would be best suits your availability, that would be great. So,
okay, thanks. Let's see. Does anyone on the Zoom or telephone wish to speak?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next, we're on item 9. It's a public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up for a regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Does anyone wish to speak on agenda items? State your name and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name's Margo Peters. I was not expecting to speak tonight, so bear with me. I wanted to address the additional staff position requests for the fire department. And I am a part-time volunteer for the fire department. And I just wanted to say that it's been quite an eye-opener for me. And the staff is doing a wonderful job, but they're very much understaffed. And in the past, the city of Unalaska has really depended on volunteers, and there aren't very many of us. And there are people who have tried to volunteer, but they don't have transportation or there's some other issue. And then the volunteers all have full-time jobs on top of everything else. So with the recent events, especially the house fire and things that have happened, it has shown us that we need more full-time staff, especially certified firefighters. And I also wanted to say that the staff, if there were more staff, they could do more things for the community. Like I remember there used to be lids for kids or something like that. And then also the fire department would go around and change batteries and smoke detectors and, you know, various things like that. So I really feel like we need more full-time staff. And I just wanted to give my 2 cents. And like I said, I wasn't prepared to speak. So anyway, that's it.
Hey, thank you. Anyone else on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Next up is our work session. May I have a motion and second to go into our work session?
I'll make a motion to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Nicholson. Let's see, we're going to a work session. Hearing no objection, we are in the work session at 6:27. First item we have for this evening is a capital projects update. And turn this over to city manager and Mr. Scott Brown to introduce.
Thank you. Mayor and Council, tonight you'll see a presentation during this work session from Scott Brown, our Public Works Director. The city, as of February 29th, has 40 active and funded projects, collectively allocated at a budget of $63.7 million. Of this amount, 21 million and some change has already been expended, with a balance of 41 million available to complete the projects. And important to remember that these projects do span, a lot of them span multiple years. So with that, I'd like to have Mr. Brown make his presentation.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you for having me. Last council meeting, we were able to close out 10, 11 projects. I was hoping to be here for part of that and actually have this as part of that, but life wasn't able to allow that. So so we'll do this now. Like Bill said, we currently have about 40 active projects. We have budgeted right now, our budgeted $63,716,872. Of that sum, we've already expended $21,112,000, and we still have available for the projects $41,024,553, and those are big numbers, so forgive me. What I'd like to do, if it's all right with council, and if this works for you, I'd like to just go down the projects one at a time, and I'll give you a quick summary of how the project's going and where we're at on it. And if you don't have any questions to follow up on, I'll just move right on to the next one. If you do, I'll look up and answer the questions as they come in. Is that acceptable? Great. Thank you. So I'll start on the first one, is the communication infrastructure. That actually is, every fund has a piece of this one, and that is for the city's intranet. So it's just kind of building selection where we could be isolated from the full internet service and more building to building internet. And that one, we're waiting for some as-built from GCI and the work that they did, so that we can make sure we have some quantity rights on some quantities correct for some of the materials that we need to order. We have all the vaults and conduit runs are done, so we really just need to order the fiber wire and then blow that into the conduit that we currently have run. So as soon as we get that information, that's supposed to be coming really shortly. We've been pushing really hard to get that, and that's been kind of a struggle. If there's any questions on that, I'll move on. Aquatic center roof. That actually started out as a real simple project and has grown more complicated as we go. Currently we are trying to scope and engineer what we're going to do with the roof. It wasn't just simply a membrane replacement. Now we've discovered that there's actually a metal roof under the existing roof. We really looked back, we don't see that construction work, so we're trying to do some fundamental work to figure that out. And we are hoping to do this work this summer, so we're really pushing that forward. And we'll probably be before council again explaining the full details of what we need to do with the roof. But right now it looks like it's not just a membrane or a roof. It will be a roof replacement. There's multiple things that are going on. It's creating other issues that are going to cause problems later down the road if we don't address it. But I will be back for council, and I know that I will probably be looking for to do a budget amendment. So that one is, I'll be before you again here shortly when we know more about that one. But it is moving along. It's just not how we wish it was going. Is there any
Councilman Luby, then Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So if it's turned out to be more than it was, are we going to get into structural as well? Or is there problems with the structure of the roof? So are we going to be looking at truss replacement, things like that? Or
I don't have a full answer for that. There is some structural issues, yes, on the roof itself. So that's part of what we need to vet out. We started with opening a 6-inch hole to see what was going on in there. Now they're requesting a 10 by 10 foot hole to really evaluate the situation. But essentially what they've done is, and we've gone way back, but they put trusses and everything over the top of a steel roof and then sealed that all in. So we've got some moisture issues, some other things that are going on, as well as the leak, the connections. They never built eaves or gutter systems, so the water's all just coming in and rolling down our walls and creating issues in there. So we're trying to take a full look at the whole thing and not just put a Band-Aid on it this time. there is some
issues there. Does this affect the whole school as well, or just the aquatic center?
It's just the aquatic center. Later, we'll be talking about more roofs, and the school needs to have some roof stuff looked at too as well, but that has nothing to do with what we're doing here.
Okay.
As far as affecting the school as a whole, there is a connection joint there that does need to be addressed, but it's not affecting the school at this time.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell.
Yeah, you touched on my question is, we have multiple buildings that need the roof replaced. And are these projects going to end up being standalone projects? Obviously, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is demob and mob for multiple contractors and increasing cost. Maybe touch on that for me.
So, yeah, we did consider trying to bundle some roofs. The way we fund and the way we do some things, that turned out to be a little bit more of a challenge. I tried to look at it as, well, maybe let's just take all the flat roofs and try to bundle them together. But some are proprietary, some are general, so it makes it a little more challenging to do that. And then the need for this pool roof is, we need to get that done now. I do have a CMMP, CMMP that's coming for a roof study, where I'd like to look at 22 roofs in the city of city-owned buildings, so that we don't run into this problem where we're kind of chasing our tail to get this fixed. We would like to be more proactive. We could set up a plan, have a schedule, be doing these roofs, but this roof needs attention. The list is long. So at that point, I think we could try and do some more of that bundling and seeing if we can work multiple projects at a time. But we did try to do some of what you're exactly to save some mob and demob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Public library. We're essentially done with that. We just sent the final payment in. As a matter of fact, I just signed that off today. There's a couple little items that we still need to get worked out. We're having some problems with the electric door locks and some minor stuff like that. But essentially that project is complete and we got a great product. Repeater site, radio upgrades, that project's done. We're just waiting for some invoicing and stuff to get done, and then it'll go on the closeout list. The record management system, public safety, that project's obviously it's had some challenges, but it's moving along fine now. We're just waiting for some hardware and some software. And then we're hoping that we can go live June on that project. Captain's Bay Road Improvement.
Councilman Tungles.
I'm sorry.
Got a question on that. We did a budget amendment on that one. So that budget amendment, we did additional money on that. That's going to complete everything we need as far as completing everything on that project.
Councilmember Tungle, yes. As it stands now, we should be done paying for everything. We did our what we believe is the final payment there. As far as the invoicing, we haven't closed project or gone that route yet, but we do believe that the expenditures are done. We still have very $1,400 left to cover any additional costs, but we've been assured we're done. So, you know, that's kind of the kiss of death, but I do believe that we're done.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
This one, you almost made me skip Captain's Bay Road. Captain's Bay Road. So this one is you'll see this will come up in a couple different places. Everybody's kind of had a different turn at this one. I like to look at this section as the paving portion of it, not the utility portion of it. So if we look at Captain's Bay Road from Airport Beach Road to westward, we have all the utilities in. We've got our water, electric, and sewer in there. So we can do pave if we were ready to pave. We could pave up to westward. We're working on some grants. We believe that we've got a great opportunity for a grant that's coming in. I believe it's $13 million. I think we got a 3% match on that. That should get us, everything goes through like we're hoping and we believe it's going to, that should get us pavement up to westward. We're working, when we get down, I'll get into the water line. But essentially, that's that part of the Captain's Bay Road improvement. We still need a water line installed from westward to OSI. We're also hoping to do that this summer. We're really pushing hard to do that this year. And that's a necessity, and we need to get it done. We got to get the water line going. So that would get us water line out to OSI proper. Then really all we needed to get the utility portion done is the sewer line, which when we get down a little further, we are working on trying to get those documents and getting some design and stuff on that last portion of the sewer line that would get us from westward to OSI. But if everything goes great here in the next couple months with these grants, we should be able to have some good news talking about this paving project. The electricity from
Councilman Coleman had a comment. Question.
Yeah, for the paving part to westward, we got STIP funding.
That's correct.
Correct. So you have allocated $5.7 million. Is that going to then, what's left? Is that going to be our portion that we'll still be needing to put that money in, even though we did get grant fund or not grant, we got federal money for that.
Councilman Coleman, thank you. Yeah. The reality probably is we were probably looking for possibly the 1% fund. We would, when we do this financing plan, we would come before you to see if it's acceptable for you. But we were looking at to match the 3% for the the $13 million. We were looking at the 1% fund to possibly do that matching from. The reality is that we have $14 million that we said we could do this project with. And those numbers were done quite a while ago. So my hope, of course, is that when we get done and get to that point, that everything will be within the budgets that we set then. My concern is that those numbers are no longer as accurate as they once were. So we will probably be using that money to be the other portions to keep us whole on this project.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Thank you. Continue, please.
Okay. The Culvert Causeway replacement project. It seems like a pretty simple project. It's got some complications with it, and we're actually seeking grant funds and working with Wildlife and some of that to see if we can get a grant to help us with that. But that project is complicated. There's fish windows we have to hit. It's one-lane road. There's not a way to reroute the road, so we've got to do the work and not cut off the valley community. So there is some challenges with that project. But right now we're really trying to work on granting opportunities for that. Berman Road Chapel upgrades. That's a tough project. We've done pretty good on the Berman Road Chapel as far as the foundation work that we had done. I think that when this project first started, this was all roofing monies that we diverted to doing some foundation work and skirting issues that had came up at the time. But now the biggest thing with the Berman Road Chapel as far as making sure that it's sound is we got to do something with the roof. And so we're going to start talking about that. If we do a roof in kind exactly the same, then that's going to be some more cost to us because the way the cedar shingles catch the ice and the snow melt once it hits the eaves creates an ice dam. I think we've talked about this before in the past. So there has to be either some heating things done or something. But we want to explore some opportunities to talk maybe some different roofing. But before we get into that fully, we want to work with the PCR and the community to see kind of the thoughts on the aesthetics of that building. So, that will be a roof project. It's also listed in the 22 roofs that we need to look at. Pavement preservation. We tried to get that done last year. I was new. We had weather issues trying to work. We're doing this in-house. So this summer we've got a plan and we're going to try and get this taken care of this summer.
Councilman Coleman.
So there was a plan to work with DOT because they have to do their runway. Is that not an option anymore?
It still is an option. We have been trying to reach out to them. The problem is we just don't know when they're going to do that runway. It keeps popping up on the project list. We're hoping that they're going to come up and do it this year. And then our thought was to see if possibly we could piggyback with them. They've got the expertise, the knowledge. We do have all the equipment and the sealant coat. So we have all the supplies and all the equipment. We just need to put it out and put it on there, but it's got a lot of parameters that make it tough for us. So absolutely, if we had an opportunity, I would probably really examine that to go to outside help with that. We have other projects that we're trying to work to this summer. So warehouse alarm system, we're actually working to try and figure out what kind of alarm system we want. We're really scoping that project out. So my first sense at looking at this budget was there's not enough money in it to do a real sprinkler system. So so we're really identifying what we want to cover with that sprinkler. Is it just the boiler area or the potential fires, or do we need to actually secure the whole storage building with sprinkler systems? So those are options that we're exploring and trying to associate some costs with that as well.
Councilman.
Is there some kind of regulation we have to do to cover the whole building? Is there a regulatory?
There's not that I'm aware of.
So no. We don't have to do the whole building with some sprinkler system, is that?
It's not inhabited, so I don't believe that is a requirement. I could look into the actual code on that. I don't know that off the top of my head. But my understanding, if it's not inhabited, have permanent habitation, that we don't have to do that.
Okay.
With that said, we do store a considerable, there's a lot of value to the things that we do store in that building. So it would behoove us to protect it. So it's just at what cost? If it costs more to put that in versus what we're storing, we're trying to develop a plan for that. So it's in the works. Electrical panel, that's getting done this summer. It's pretty straightforward. It's not a big project, and that's plenty of money to cover that cost. High school boiler replacement, we're working on that. We got a couple gentlemen showing up tomorrow actually flying in that are going to do the final look through and make sure we got all the parts and pieces and everything we need, and kind of give us our final go ahead, and then we'll start moving that project more forward as soon as we have all those answers. But that's slated to be done this summer in conjunction with either a pool liner or pool repairs for the spalling that's showing up in the pool. Electrical fund, the automated meter reads, they're all installed. Everything's good. We're really working out to get, we can go around and collect all that information. We just need to, we're working with our Munis software to get the kilowatts converted into dollars. So that's kind of a challenge. There's some power factor issues, so it's just not a straightforward. We can't just dump that right in. But once that's done and all that's done, we should be able to push a button, collect all the meter reads, and everything just dumps into the system. It'll be a huge improvement to what we've been doing. Wind power development. So we had a plan. We had a study that we did. And that came back. They did find a place for clean wind, which is in the valley, or excuse me, up on Pyramid. They believe there's enough room for 5 turbines up there. There's also additional room for 3 other turbines that are on property that's adjacent to the city property. Each one of those turbines would be 1 megawatt of power. So if we just went on our own, we'd be able to have 5 megawatts of clean energy that we would be introducing to our system. Currently, I forget the company that we have working on that study, but that company, Chris Laddick and EPS, are all currently working right now just to integrate this big plan of trying to get power and multi-use power. Do we need a new power plant? But they're working on a plan to see how we can integrate that clean energy into our power system. McCushion Geothermal, I think we talked a little bit about it. I don't really have much to offer on that right at this moment. Bill, did you want to add anything to that?
Sorry. I just got distracted by a message. What did you
Geothermal?
Show? The geothermal project. The geothermal project is, like I said, we're putting in for this grant of $125 million. The $50 million is to test the well site. To be competitive, we actually have to show reduction in pollution within 5 years. So that is why we already had the study ready for wind generation, and we've deployed that to have that reviewed as whether or not that's feasible. And that's what we were applying for in partnership with then with OC, because they own the rest of the land. We have received, you know, basically information about installing 5 turbines that are rated appropriately. So I'm told, and there is information on there that appears to be valid, but I'm not an engineer for our environment. But while they spec'd 5, I think, believe OC is interested in pursuing some on their land in the same kind of area. So I'm not exactly sure if it will be 3 or 5 more for them. That would be a total of, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10 megawatts. And that is one of the requirements for us to be able to be competitive. Drilling for a future source, I think, is very positive, but it alone wouldn't do it. And even if we put in, as we were initially thinking, for an entire $300 million to fund the whole project, that would not have been as strong. Even though it's a perfect project, it's not exactly shovel ready, because we still have to prove that resource. And that's going to take some time. If we already had that resource proved, we would be better off. But we know that would be the same for the last time, correct, as we were trying this. So, but one thing I think we're confident in is proving the resource, we'll be able to move forward and do better at getting funding via loans from the Department of Energy, investors, and other sorts of financial interests, which was a drawback for the last effort. So proving the resource, which everyone believes is there, but for people to be comfortable in giving millions and millions of dollars, You know, they want to know that it's a safe investment for whether it's public or private dollars. So that's our course.
Councilman Bell.
Yeah, so the I guess it shows $6.3 million still available for that. Is that simply a placeholder until we have a more definitive plan, or does that have a purpose at this point?
It probably would be put towards the project, but I don't have a specific answer for you at this time, sir.
Thank you.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The electrical distribution system, or excuse me, electrical distribution equipment replacement, that's ongoing. You'll see that every year on here. And we are currently, and we're making a real push. Myself and Eric and the whole electric crew are really making a push to get the infrastructure updated and back on track. Generator set rebuild, where that's been conducted. We got a head coming in. I think it's the last piece of this. We'll put that on, and then we will have all the engines able to run at the powerhouse. As well, I wanted to report, you may have gotten it through a different email, that some of the bugs that we've been fighting for, I guess, 13 years on, or 10 years anyway, on one of the engines, engine 13, maybe 7 years, engine 13. But they did find the bug that was causing problems with that. It was a hairline crack in a wire. And so they did fix that and repair it. So hopefully we'll not have some of these power outages that we've been experiencing lately. The large transformer and maintenance.
Councilman Tungo, please.
Sir,
so
go ahead.
We replace a few transformers, right? With all this, with all the glitches and some transformer popping up. Are we, did we replace a few transformers with this problem that we're having, electrical?
Councilman Tungle, yes. I would say that I would not relate the changing of the transformers directly to the power problems or the surging or the issues with the engines. I would say that we do have some transformers that probably needed to be replaced, and those just found the weakness and brought that forward. But currently we do have a replacement program, and we're trying to get
those glitches and power outages that we have, it did not create any problem replacing transformers. It did not burn any transformers, is what I'm getting at.
Not to my understanding, but let me look over here and see if I'm incorrect. No. No, that the power problems with the engines did not cause the transformers to be replaced. I
thank you.
I think there were separate issues that just came up at the same time. But okay, the water fund, again, fiber optic development, that's the same project that I mentioned, the first project on here. We're waiting for some as-builts, and then we'll get some proper quantities. Pyramid micro turbines, those are installed, operating, and they're actually functioning well. They're producing enough power to run that building and possibly a little bit more. We'll probably be closing that one here shortly, too. We are still doing some fine-tuning just to see the best flows and rates for the best power that we can get out of those turbines. But they are up and operating as we hoped.
Councilman Luby and Bell.
So on the turbines, do we have the capacity to put more in to produce power? I mean, there again, that's green energy, right? Or do we have other locations that we could look at for something like that?
I believe that putting them in the building that there's not currently enough room in that building to do the same thing that we did, that we have now. Certainly we could look for other areas and sources to do that. I don't know that we are actively doing that at this time. I know that we've explored it in the past a little bit. But that certainly is an opportunity for us.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious if it would help our grant application. Well, green energy, is it not? Just a thought.
The marching order I've got is when it comes to the power, nothing's off the table. We're really trying to figure out a way to get through this.
Councilman Bell.
Yeah, the idea of putting in more microturbines makes you cringe considering how over budget this project ended up being. But my question was, are we seeing close to the efficiencies that we expected from these turbines?
My understanding is yes, and they're actually exceeding that. At what level we're exceeding what we were hoping for, I don't know yet. I don't think we've fully vetted out all the options and opportunities and different ways we can run those turbines. I think we're still working through that. They're still new. So, but
thank
we
you.
Own them now.
Okay.
The CT tank interior painting, we put that on hold a minute. If we were to partake that right now, it would potentially impact on Westward during the seasons. With the water line replacement being so close, we think it would be better to get that completed because then it would eliminate that whole storage tank system. We could just run off of the water system as it has. So still in the plan, still in the work, and still needs to be done. We're just going to put it off a little bit until we get that water line done. Then we won't impact any of our customers. The Captain Bay Road water extension. So we're in a good spot on that. As far as we've got the project scoped, engineered, the permitting is on its way. We've paid for the permitting, and we should have those in hand shortly. And and the bid documents as well to get that out to bid. That project is estimated to be 4.7 million to complete that water line from Westward to OSI proper, is what that came in at. We currently have 800,000 in there for that project. We're hoping to take, I think, 3.1 out of the proprietary fund to cover that. And then for the 1.7, we'll be working on a plan to finance that as well. And we've discussed the 1% fund, but we'll further that conversation.
We're talking about the 4.7 million extension, waterline extension.
Yes.
And I thought we spoke about the 1% for the capital project, Scott. If not, it's my mistake. The project is basically ready to go, as you heard from Scott. However, funding for it would start, if we use this as a CMMP project, it won't be authorized, of course, until you approve the CMMP and fiscal year 25 starts. I'd like to propose that we use $4.7 million out of the 1% fund to get this project started and actually do a budget amendment this year, which would give us 2 months because of the construction season. The leak is a much bigger leak than I have ever been led to believe. And it's actually been leaking for 30 years. I would like to make a commitment to get this water line done this year. So I'll talk more about that later, but that's just a recent development. There's about $14 million in the capital projects 1% fund, so it's healthy. And then it would take some pressure off of these other sources. So,
thank you, Bill. Is there any more questions on that water line?
No.
East Point Crossing, that's a water line that we have that goes across East Point. That's a new project. We're still really trying to figure out how to do that and if we can bundle that at the same time as they're doing something for the geothermal. But that's kind of where that was got a little bit slower. But, yeah, we're working on that project to do that inspection. Icy Lake hydraulic survey. I believe that we've got a firm. It's Cameron here. Did we get a firm to do the geothermal, to fly the drone and do those calculations? Okay, that was, I wasn't sure that that was last I heard on that. So we got the capability to do that internally. So we'll be doing that survey internally. I believe that we might need a little bit of software update or something like that to be able to do that internally. The Wellhouse 1, Wellhouse 2 chlorine generation, we got into trying to scope that project and found the buildings were too small to fit a generator. So we're actually doing some research on if there's smaller generators that you could do it, that we could get to fit in there, or can we use our existing generators and have some type of a delivery system where we would basically bring an ISO tank down there and plug it into the Wellhouse 1 and Wellhouse 2 to do that chlorination of the water. So we're still in the process of actually scoping that one. Councilmember Bell? Sorry.
The on-site chlorine generation, is that part of the same project there with the water treatment chlorine upgrade? Or are those separate?
Separate projects.
Okay. And did we skip over the upgrade? Is that one almost done?
Let's see. I should not have skipped over it. Oh, I sure did. Thank you. I'll do that next. The chlorine upgrade that we did up at Pyramid, we put in the two generators and redundant systems and that. They're operating fine. That's another project that we're completed. I think we're waiting for some invoicing and minor issues. I think there's a pump that's giving us a little bit of grief and a blower or something. But essentially, the project's up. We're producing our own chlorine. And I think it was a good project. So those are separate projects. We'll be closing that one here shortly.
Thank you.
The water storage tank, we're actually looking at that one. We, you know, always visioned in the easiest places to put up a pyramid, but we've had some conversations now. It might be better to place that in some other locations in town. So we're looking at some of that to really see where that tank would serve us better. Some of that came before we were doing the water line. So it was, it's really easy to put it up there, but it actually might serve us better to figure out how to put it on Alaska side, or excuse me, the Dutch Harbor side and have a system down there. Water utility reads, same thing. That everything's in place for that. We still need to purchase radios. We have the funding to do that available. And then that project will be caught up with the electrical auto reads. And it's the same thing. The heavy lifting's being done on the electrical side, because once they figure that out, it should be almost plug and play once the radios are purchased for the water line. Auto water reads. We're on the wastewater fund. That's the fiber optic intro structure development. So that's the same thing. That's the, we're waiting for as-built, and then they'll patch all the city buildings together once we get that in. This Captain's Bay Road water line, or wastewater line, that's a sewer line. We're actually talking to some engineers to try and help us get that project started, the scoping on that. And that would be a sewer line from westward to OSI. Again, the OSI property line. And so we're just starting that process of really getting the scoping done and trying to find out how much they're going to charge us to put that engineering plan together. Solid waste. The only thing we've got on here at this time is the solid waste gasifier. We have $700,000 available for that. That project we're actually looking at and we'll probably come to council to discuss changing the scope of this project a little bit. But what we really think is we really need to do an assessment on, will a gasifier truly work in Unalaska? If we do get one, can we use that to supplement some power? Is it worth it to put a generation on that and possibly produce some power there too as well? What type of gasifier do we need? All those kind of questions to answer that. So we'll have more discussion with council over that just to make sure we're heading in the right direction on the gasifier. There still is a need for it. We just need to know how expensive and if the cost for that justifies some of the other issues that we're trying to deal with that would rectify. Ports, the CMM breakwater repairs. Currently, it's been a long project. I had my turn on this one when I was working with Peggy out there. But the Corps finally got our attention on this one. I believe they set $2 million aside to engineer and come up with some design and repairs to get the floating breakwater stable again. Cruise ship demand study, we actually still have to work on that. We get going and then things change. Currently, we want to see what's going to happen with the inner harbor dredging, because that's going to really direct some of that study for the size of ships we can get in the harbor. Our assumption is that we'll continue to move forward, but and that's what we're planning on. But that could change if council decides that we need to go a different direction there.
So the tideland that we built in there, is that part? Are we doing a part of the study that they're doing? Are they going that far?
The laydown area?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
I actually think they're going further than that. Are they going clear down to a boat launch? Okay. Yeah, they're going about halfway down the road. Thank you. The emergency mooring buoy. We're actually in discussions with the Coast Guard and the pilots to see what we could do there differently. We used to have a giant tie-up line that was available out there all the time. It's just not healthy for that to be laying in the water, growth and everything that gets on it. And we can't trust its integrity once that happens, when we put those big ships on there. And the last thing we want is one of those to get loose. So we're working with the pilots to come up with some new pentel hitch design where they could just essentially drop a loop on the hook, opposed from the shackling and all the stuff that we do now, or us buying a line to put on there. I think the last time we purchased it, and that was quite a while ago, it was well over $100,000 for 100 feet of line. So it's a tough one to do every year. And then, too, every time a ship goes on it, you really should change it after that as well, because you can't trust the next ship. So anyway, we're working on that. We're also working with the Coast Guard to look at how the chains and the cable and the tri-plates and everything are laying down there. Emergency cliff stabilization. We've had our work on that. We're working with R&M, and essentially what we're really looking at out of all the projects and processes, we think that probably the best way to move forward and most cost-effective for us is to build the sacrificial wall. So we're asking R&M, they're still looking at some mechanical things for us that we could do. Those just sound like a never-ending money pit at some level, because we can't assure that we stabilize the rocks behind the rocks that we're removing or drilling into. So I think that right now the smartest thing is if we put a sacrificial wall in there, then it doesn't really matter what the rocks do, provided it protects the building. So we're getting some costs on that and concrete quantities and how that would be put together. And we will definitely have a conversation with council when we have our options fully vetted. Entrance channel dredging. You want to answer that, Bill, or you have anything on that? I think we're
We're covering that in another matter here in the work session, but obviously we didn't have my ducks in a row when I met with you the last time, and I have them tonight, but I'll cover more in, when we get to that work session item.
Thank you, Bill. Light cargo UMC dredging, I think Peggy touched on that a little bit. P&D is out here doing the geotech work. Unfortunately, I don't know what their schedule is, and I know they have run into some weather and dock scheduling issues. So, but I'm sure that's moving forward as quickly as we can. And then the last one I've got on here for ports is, restrooms. We're looking into restrooms. It's actually tougher than you think. We've seen a couple, but they're just not going to work for what we want to do, as well as we've been talking about a harbor house or harbor office, so potentially that might incorporate it. But what we're currently doing is we're still out looking for the right plug-and-play kind of restroom system that we're hoping to get. They're out there. We just haven't been able to connect with the right folks yet. And then Bobby Storr saying B float. We're working on that. We actually are scheduling with P&D, Dick Somerville, and we're going over some just make sure we're on the same page. And that's a design build project. So once we set that out, then he'll be able to finish the engineering and scoping and bid documents. And then we'll be discussing a funding plan. Make sure we have the rest of the money to fund the rest of that project. That's the last I have on there for now. I know that was a lot. I would encourage you guys, if you're through Bill, to come and visit with me anytime you want to talk to projects. I'll give you much more detail and where we're at and how we're doing and the funding sources. But if you don't have any other questions, that's all I got for you tonight.
Councilman Luby, Councilman Tungle.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for the update. I appreciate that. And it's really nice to hear where we are with every project. I know it takes a little bit to go through them all, but I do appreciate it. So thank you.
Well, I was going to do the same thing. So thank you very much. That's a lot of good information and getting us all up to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council.
Council. Go ahead.
I want to acknowledge the work that Scott has done for being down there just over a year. I think that's the most comprehensive project summary that I've heard since we've been here. I know it takes a little while, but as I said, there are a lot of grants running around out there trying to pair up with projects and other projects that aren't CMMP items. And I think it is important that you all get the full dose of exactly where we are in some of these. So I appreciate that work. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks. Thank you. Appreciate the report. I think we'll probably get into it again in another month. All right. We'll have questions by then. Thank you. Okay. Next item we have was a draft FY2534 CMMP. And we got City Manager and Cameron Dean from Planning Department.
Thank you, Mayor and Council, again. So before us tonight is our first official review of this year's proposed CMMP for the fiscal year 25. Of course, it's a 10-year outlook, but we're looking at projects for this year. And as I said, I wanted to point out that one of the changes just recently is really, I would like to attack the project waterline extension on Captain's Bay Road. So while you see that in here for proposed for this year's CMMP, I would like to discuss with you further at a later time here about trying to do that project yet this fiscal year with the 1%. So with that, Cameron, feel free to come up and share the plan as it is currently.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor, Council. So this is a draft of the FY25-34 CMMP. I'm going to focus on what's changed since you looked at this in January and focus on a couple areas of the plan. So for any CMMP, when you vote to approve this, you're voting to approve funding for that coming fiscal year. So for this one to be FY25. In this draft, we're proposing a total of $22.5 million for FY25. Of that, close to $10 million is external funding for that the CTP grant on Captain's Bay Road, assuming they receive that. Of the remainder, we currently have $3.35 million from the general fund, $4.7 million from the 1% fund, that's the for the water line extension, and then the remainder from different proprietary funds. So one big process change that we're doing with this year, we tried to revise the criteria for including projects on the CMMP versus departmental operating budgets. I think since I've been here, we've gone back and forth a couple of times on how exactly we split that up. But moving forward, strict rule, only projects that are resulting in a fixed asset are going to show up on the CMMP. So things like feasibility studies, plans, some of the smaller equipment purchases, those are going to transition to departmental operating budgets. And that's something our finance department suggested, and it kind of puts us more in line with good accounting practices and hopefully keeps us more, you know, better separation going forward. So because of that, we did remove a couple projects from the CMMP that you saw on previous drafts, and those are going to show up on department operating budgets. So you'll have a, you'll still see those and have a chance to talk about them when those operating budgets are presented. So those are the public transportation project, camera replacements at public safety building and city hall, DPW, the comprehensive roof assessment project that Scott talked about, and the ports feasibility for the ports office. And we also pulled out the feasibility study part of the fire station project from the CMMP, and that'll show up on the fire department's operating budget this year. That's $300,000 right now. But you'll still see the larger fire station project on the CMMP for the design and construction of that building. This also means that a couple of the other plans that we have been including on the CMMP are moving off of it. So facilities maintenance plan and painting plans will not be on the CMMP anymore. You'll still, Scott will present those at a later meeting. We are keeping the rolling stock will stay on the CMMP though. Are there any questions about that change before I go on? Yeah.
Councilman Luby.
So when the stuff that we're moving off of the CMMP, will they still be on the list of projects that Scott just went through? Will they still show up here even though they're not on here?
Yeah, you'll still see them.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So moving on to the actual projects, Scott talked about some of the need for roof replacements. There is a couple of buildings that need replacements soon, the airport terminal, Scott mentioned the aquatic center, as well as the public works building. So this year on the CMMP, we do have funding for the replacement of the public works building roof. That's about $2.5 million. So it's accounting for, you know, most of the general funds expenditure that we have on there right now. We're still estimating remaining costs for some of the others. So we might, depending on how that turns out, be adding those or recommending those are added to the CMMP as well. Moving on to electric projects. So some of these you see every year, and they're representing, you know, major maintenance of the powerhouse, so like the genset rebuilds, see that every year. Or for the, on the distribution side, the electrical equipment replacement. That one, we consistently fund that every year. We did decide to request increasing that this year to $500,000. It's distribution equipment, transformer switches, all of that stuff has gotten way more expensive in the last couple of years. There's also crazy lead times with them right now that makes this replacement more complicated. Other area to focus on with electric projects is the energy storage system. So that's one that has been on the CMMP for a while in various forms. Is on the CMMP, at least when I got here in 2019. And it's been on. And then it, when we started with the McCushion Geothermal, we took it off the CMMP because that was going to incorporate, it was incorporated into that McCushion Geothermal project. So now that that's situation's changing again, we're bringing it back as a standalone project. We closed out the original standalone project for it, so returned that money to the funds. But like they showed from the last presentation, there's money remaining in the McCushion geothermal upgrades, and we'd be looking to use some of that for the design of the energy storage system this year. And that's also, I think Bill mentioned, that's also being included in the geothermal grant, so that's a possibility as well for funding that. Are there any questions before I move on to Captain's Bay Road?
Councilman Luby.
So on the electrical, just over year after year, you can see that it's going to be quite a bit of money that we need to invest in electrical. And I agree. I think the whole community would agree that we need to invest in our electrical system and do something. So my one question I have, though, is, so we're taking the money out of the proprietary fund to pay for this stuff. Originally, like, for example, when we bought the generators, did those... And you probably can't answer this question, actually. I shouldn't even ask it. I'm sorry. I'm just curious, is the depreciation should be paying for replacements if we're doing this the way I'm thinking we're doing it. But does the proprietary fund have a fund balance? Do we know?
In the electric proprietary?
Yes.
The electric proprietary is, I think, always one of our most healthy proprietary funds. I'd have to pull up the financial reports to tell you what exactly that is, but it's much healthier than, per se, you know, the airport or the housing proprietary funds are.
Okay. I think we need to talk about the proprietary funds more. So, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Captain's Bay Road. Won't spend a ton of time on this one because talked about it already, but the grant funding you see for FY25, that's the CTP, assuming we receive it. We are looking, as Scott showed, there's money in the project already for paving, and we're looking to use some of that for the, it's a $3.16 million match for that grant, so we'd be looking to use that for it. And then, like Bill said, priority this year is waterline extension. We wrote into the CMMP from the 1% fund for FY25, but if you choose to fund that earlier, we can certainly change that. And we're still, talked about this a bit the last time we presented the CMMP, but we're making progress on Captain's Bay Road, but all of the improvements still exceed that current funding that we have. So it really needs its own, it's a huge project. It needs its own conversation about financing and our strategy for that. So on the CMMP, you, like in past years where you see kind of future years with grant funding in them, that's sort of undefined money that we're expecting to need for the project, but we don't have a source yet.
Councilman Togo.
So we did receive some 13.7 million for this project, right? And we're waiting for the STIP, still ongoing, that's gonna be showing up soon.
Yeah, it's we were included on the CTP and it's part of the STIP, but that hasn't been approved by the feds yet, so it's kind of in limbo until it happens. So
okay,
we wrote it in. It's in here as if we're receiving it right now.
Perhaps that's a good time to interject. And as I sit here, it's been busy. And one of the things that I realized I didn't even include in my manager's report is I have spent some time talking to contacts at the local processors and talking about getting support letters, which I've already received, for our EPA grant. And also about what we're going to do in the short term in terms of trying to supply power and help stabilize what's happening in our grid and our generation facility. And there is interest in forming this cooperative. I'm just at the very beginning of this. It's something we've talked about for a long time, but no one's ever actually, to my knowledge, really held serious conversations at great lengths, if at all, with the processing community. I think all of you, and I know I believe one of my manager council directives was to actually do this about the same time we were looking. And I think it's a conversation that's being received well, although I myself have a lot to learn on that. And I would like to acknowledge Mr. Matt Scott, who is, you know, our, in a way, our consultant through Optumera in helping us, you know, troubleshoot what problems we have with our grid right now in the absence of five linemen. I have great confidence that we will have some productive discussions about this here shortly. And there's a lot for all of us to learn about. What does it mean? The word co-op has been thrown around. I see what different ones are doing. Some are doing well, some aren't. What's ours? All these questions about what do we do with our assets? Are they leased? Are they sold? There's a lot of those things yet that aren't even, we haven't scratched the surface. But I'm really proud to say that it's something that the local community has been waiting for and is willing to talk about. And I think that is definitely part of our near-term solution as we wait for how to move to clean energy. So I'm sorry to have dropped that from the manager's report. And thank you for letting me explain a little bit about how we're supplementing this kind of discussion. That as well, how do we, and another effort that I haven't had time to really dig into is a LID, local improvement district. So say the project was a simple $100 million and we get $25 million in grant funding, that leaves $75 million that's coming from somewhere. The council is going to have to decide how do we want to involve some of the same people I just talked about and all of the landowners on that road, because it's probably not in our best interest to be giving away a road all the way down to somewhere without capturing some of the benefits that they're receiving and helping pay at what level. And that's another large project. So you have a few things that we're going to be working on here in the next 6 months. So.
Okay, so I'll move on to PCR then. Does Roger talked about PCR master plan. It's getting going and it'll be going for the rest of the year. That's going to guide their capital projects going forward. So what you see on the CMMP now is based on previous, you know, PCR is an annual planning effort of their staff. They work with, I used to be on the PCR committee, so they work with us in proposing those projects. And that's how these are on the CMMP now. So because the master plan is happening, we expect a lot of those to change. But at the moment, it's our best assessment of PCR's projects going forward. Because the master plan process is underway, we, as much as possible, put PCR projects after this year. So it has it'll be complete before we start on them. The one exception to that is the rebar restoration and plastering at the Aquatic Center. It just makes sense to do now in tandem with the boiler repairs and minimize downtime there. You'll also see a new project from the last draft on there, and that's a replacement for the elementary school playgrounds. That's been recommended to us by the school district. We're, in code, the city is provide major maintenance and replacement of school buildings, and that includes the playgrounds. So that playground's reached its end of life, and they've recommended replacing it to us, so we're looking at that. It's like the rest of PCR's projects, we'd be considering that as part of the PCR master planning process. So we're not requesting funding for it this year. I put in some money for design and construction in FY26 and 27 for that. But we'd expect that project, like the others, will change and get more sketched out as we do the plan. Then moving on to public safety in the fire department. So for a few years now, we've had three separate projects on the CMMP for a fire training center, renovating the fire station, or renovating the current public safety building into a dedicated fire station, and building a new police station. So as we talked about, in January, that changing a little bit. So instead of a separate training center, separate fire station, we'd be integrating those two together as a new building, fire station with an integrated training facility. And we'd be looking to do that first and then building the new police station after that. Right now, there's no funding in the CMMP requested for the fire station, but there is feasibility study money requested in their operating budget. And then as we have it currently scheduled, design would come in FY26 and then construction starting in FY27 for that. And we're doing that partly to align with, there's a lot of like state funding opportunities that the fire chief is exploring and other grant opportunities we can stack that with. So that's kind of why we're doing a feasibility study now in FY25, but still looking fairly quickly for design and construction later. Yeah.
Councilman Coleman.
So we've already done a complete, spent money on a complete building assessment back in 2000. Well, it was presented in 2019. And are we not considering the findings for that anymore? I mean, so we've already bought and paid for a complete assessment, and the needs were already outlined at that time. So I'm wondering why we're moving in a totally different direction when we've been going one direction this whole time. I have a hard time seeing. The needs were already established, and I don't think the needs have changed. Maybe they have dramatically in the past 5 years or 4 years, but I don't understand the direction that we're now looking to go, and a much more expensive one too.
I can't say I'm fully prepared to answer your question, except that that particular study was really geared towards, I believe, the site that the clinic is going to be using for. I don't think it also fully integrated what as a campus would be for public safety all in general. But yeah, that's my understanding. I will say that I was pleased after the last meeting that was here and we discussed some of this. So I'd just been driving down the road and come into Public Works and see, I thought I was missing a meeting because I saw a bunch of trucks there and they had taken it on themselves and they're down there wheeling, trying to figure out how to use existing assets, existing resources and studies to realign. So this isn't complete in front of you yet, but I am happy that they put about everything on the table to see what they could shell, what they could move, swing space, what are the needs? And that's just physically. I know that they're also looking at what resources have already been done. However, I would say that I don't think that we looked, for someone out there who knows, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that that study comprehensively looked at police and fire. I thought it was just police. So I could be wrong.
Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, as a follow-up, I think you might be a little off on that one. So I did review the building assessment. I actually listened to the previous recordings because I was here during that. They did take both into account. They did a major interview with all the participants and all the people who would be affected by it. And so, it kind of goes back to this thing. We do all this work and study, and then nobody looks back to go and review and see what was done. So I highly recommend it. We've already done this part. If the strategy and the goals have changed, then okay, but you still need to start from what you've already begun. And again, none of this whole shift in direction is just kind of throwing me off here. And if you read through it, the needs, staff has changed now, but the needs at the time, I don't know why they've just disappeared, because the building is the same and the problems are the same and they're just getting worse.
I appreciate your comments, Councilwoman, and we will look into that study further. I'm sorry I wasn't more prepared.
Great, thanks. Continue.
I think it's most of what we had for DPS and fire. I do want to know, like Bill said, we're looking at developing those on a single campus. And then we'd also necessarily be outside of tsunami inundation zone. So especially for a new fire building, we'd be looking at that as like emergency refuge space for a tsunami. So moving on to ports, see The LCD and UNC dredging project is back. We put in a request for the project through CAPSIS for $2.7 million in FY25. And we're showing that on here as well. We do recommend ports wanted to proceed with that, even if the CAPSIS request is not funded. So that's why we're showing it on FY25, the ports proprietary funds here. And then Peggy has talked about this recently, but the UMC positions 5 through 7, we put a very rough number for construction for that in FY26, but we definitely expect that to change as the engineering comes back and we know more about that project. We have another, so yeah. you'll have another chance for the CMMP. The final draft is next meeting.
April 9th.
Sorry, I kind of cut off there, but yeah.
Well, thank you for the update, and like I said.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you want
to that the, Councilman Coleman? No. Councilman Bell.
Please remind me, when will we see a draft of the draft budget?
Doing budget presentations the 8th and the 9th of April.
So. Okay. All right. I read that. I just was thinking here about what's going on here. Looking at this, and I think that's kind of important to have that some of that information on there, is understanding how much money is in some of these proprietary funds. How much money do we have to spend? That's going to be the question. That's the question every year. And I'm optimistic now that we have a full-time finance director that we can finally boil those numbers down and figure out what we have to spend and can we afford all these projects, especially when we start a project in 1 year, looking to spend a gob of money in the next couple of years, is making sure those projects are actually funded moving forward. The water extension, I get the need for that, and I don't disagree. And I think the 1% fund is probably going to be a good place for that. But in my mind, there's other projects that need to come out of that. I think the roof replacement projects on many of these buildings probably should be coming out of that 1% fund. I think we already have another project where we've got about $4 million that's encumbered or slated to come out of that 1% fund. And so having an overall financial picture, I think, is going to be important. There may be $13 million in that 1% fund, but that fund has had some money for a while. And all these faces out here are going to look at us with a critical look going, hey, there was $13 million in there. Now there's $2 million or $4 million. You know, well, you guys are spending a lot of money pretty quick. So I think just moving forward, having a better idea of where these monies are coming out of, I get that the $4.7 million we're looking at the 1% fund because the water fund is broke. It doesn't have a bunch of money that we can spend out of there without raising rates. I don't know the conditions of the other funds other than I think the electric fund is in fairly good shape and has some money. But does it have the money, for a $3.8 million project next year? Or are we going to have to be taking money out of the general fund? As I move forward here, I think this year my focus is going to be on the budget, that whatever surpluses we have at the end of the budget year are going to be the monies that are going to pay for these capital projects. And any monies that are in the proprietary funds will be the ones that are paid for those projects. Trying to stay away from this big transfer in from the general fund to try and fund some of these projects unless it's an absolute need. So anyways, those are some of my comments, and I'll let some of the other counselors speak.
We'll hear that again on April 9th. Same issue with numbers. Who's next? Councilman Louie.
So the rolling stock, it says it's going to come out of a proprietary fund, but it's under Public Works. Which proprietary fund is that coming from, or is it multiple? Or
it'll be multiple. Okay. And I think, Scott, you're presenting that one of the meetings in April 9th. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that'll be broken out in more detail when Scott does that.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. I just more of a comment here. And I know you made the remark that, yeah, you know, when we're looking at these, you know, we got this year's and this is our fiscal year that we're looking for CMP. But I think, you know, Mr. Bell pretty much hit it on the head, is that you start a project, you got to look farther down the line and you got to look at the other years. That's why we have a plan going out. Right. And the numbers for this year are like, okay, probably doable. Let's look at the budget. But as you look at the next fiscal year and the fiscal years and those that projects that are tied over and some that are starting new have me extremely alarmed. And when I look to approve, I'm looking at the whole picture. And I know our fiscal health looks pretty decent right now. But if anybody is paying attention to fisheries and the state of the industry, it isn't quite so rosy as it's looking out to be. We are probably at one of the worst. I think the vice president from Westward said it best. He's been out here for 40 years. It's probably one of the worst conditions that he's seen so far. We work in a global market, and there are some things coming that we are dealing with as an industry that is making things very, very difficult. $2 billion was lost last year in pollock alone. $2 billion. And that is mostly from B season. They were doing pretty well in A season. B season came around and everything just crashed. So even though I think we did a revenue assessment, looks pretty reasonable, but, you know, a lot of folks are just treading water right now. And even though on the surface it looks pretty decent, it doesn't look so good underneath. And I think the next couple, 3 years are going to be telltale. So I really ask to proceed with caution. And these numbers in the next fiscal years are quite frightening. And so I would hate to see us start to really make some big moves and pushes with, I mean, even listening to the earlier presentation, all the buildings that we have to maintain are falling apart because they've been ignored. I'd like to just really focus on maintaining what we have, improving what we have. Because I am extremely concerned. I know that this council before has really kind of like, you know, been cautious about the fisheries. I mean, it's even possible that we could be the next spotted owl of the Northwest. It could all go away. It's very possible. So, with that lovely news, my point is when I look at these, I look at our trends and where we're going and what's being put out there, and I'm worried by it. So there's some things we need, the electricity for sure, stabilize that. But and I know we've got a new plant possibly coming on, so we're trying to work towards that, but I don't want projects to revolve around one company either. We've got the rest of the town to worry about. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you. I just want to express my concerns at this time.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle.
Yeah, I hear what you say. I hear what Councilman Coleman say. But we got to protect the infrastructure that we got, and we got to keep moving. We got to have a plan on how we proceed. You know, if we approve this, that don't mean we got to do everything in here. Everything on the project that got to come up, it's got to be approved again by the council. So that doesn't mean everything got to be done. We always move some of the project far beyond on their schedule, because we don't have enough money or it's not ready. But we gotta keep providing for the community, and we gotta make sure, as we said, the quality of life in here is what we, is our goal, and we make sure we provide that. And fishing might be going down. It's been down and up. I've seen it going down and up. And right now, it's not looking good. That they said the next couple of years or so, but at least right now we're still doing good. And I think when that comes up, we can make the adjustment on what we want to do, because we can always cancel any project that we got. And as long as it did not get started, and it's always come up to us before we start any project to approve it or not, even though it's on the CMMP. So I don't want to stop and just protect what we got. We want to keep moving. I think this community is it's got its bad times, hard times, and it's got some good times, and it's going to keep happening. It's going to be like a wheel. But it bounced back up from a real bad year back in the 80s, mid-80s. And it bounced back up the last 20 years or so, 30 years. So I don't see it. I know it's kind of scary, but at the same time, we're still in a good, I think we're still good, doing good the way things is going in this community. So I still want to make sure we provide with this community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Cameron, for your report.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm going to ask for, there's a public comments on capital projects and updates and draft FY24-34 years CMMP on both of those. These are interrelated. One is you know, major investment capital projects, and that is a plan of utilizing funds for 10 years. And this time I'll take comments from the public, starting within the chambers here. You have your name and 3 minutes, and you will be cut off at 3 minutes. And then we'll go to the Zoom. Do it.
Yes, thank you. Dennis Robinson for the record. Thank you, Sherry. Very good points. I disagree with you, Mr. Tungle. The fisheries has been going up and has gone down before, but we are facing now a brand new set of problems that we've never faced before, and it's caused by the world market, and we have no control over that. So it is very a dangerous situation that we're putting ourselves in. But I do agree with you that we need to maintain the infrastructure that we have, and we need to move forward with quality of life. But that balance needs to be struck pretty well. And from what I've seen in the past few council meetings of the spending, that is like, holy cow, we've never spent like that before. But I appreciate the work that the administration has gone through and putting this together. I guess I didn't weigh in. I probably should call them and talk to them. But now you're going to have to change the name CMMP to something else, because the whole idea when we first started the CMMP was to be able to look at all of the projects and all the expenditures all in one sheet. So we knew at one point and one time that we would have to probably start looking at some more, because the number of projects will grow, and it gets complicated. But that was the whole idea of the CMMP, was to give us, you know, the council a good view of what we had to spend and where it was going when. So, but I appreciate the work. Let's protect what we have, what we've built. We can't let that fall apart, because it's going to cost 3 or 4 times as much to rebuild it again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. Anyone else in chambers? Either on capital projects or draft CMMP? Okay, hearing none, is there anybody on the phone or Zoom to speak to these two working session items?
No one has indicated, Mayor, that they would like to speak.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back. We have two more items in our work session to take care of, FY25 additional staff projections and proposal for the IFHS chronic funding. So 5 minutes, we'll come back. Thank you.
We are requesting the addition of 4.3 full-time employees for FY25. I've evaluated the requests from PCR, Public Works, Public Utilities, and the Fire Department. And I support their requests. And I believe the financial impact is actually much less than the positive impact these new positions will have on city operations and services and the perspective of the public about what they're getting. The positions from PCR include student interns, and I believe I've said it before, but I confess, I believe in the value of student interns. You get a lot of work out of students, typically college students, that typically align with the positions or the departments or functions that they are there to help with. Cost benefit is fantastic. I've had it down in Public Works for 2 years, I believe. So I've suggested that they do that. These are our locals, our youths coming home from college, so we don't have housing issues typically. And oftentimes, as in this one recent case, they stay. That's one of the priorities we really look for. Also in PCR is lifeguards. This is really a no cost. It's just adding the pool, no pun intended, adding the pool of guards available to guard the pool. Because they are students, high school students, their priorities are work, but it's a lot more 10 hours a week. We have a defined number of hours that are open. We're just trying to broaden that pool of positions so that our director and our pool manager have access to more resources to cover those shifts, and I support those. From the public works side of things, the request is to combine two facility part-time maintenance positions into one. They've been having trouble with those temporary positions because they're not full-time positions, and they haven't been getting filled regularly, and I believe Scott's request to combine them will be a better efficiency. However, of course, it's a full-time, not part-time. So benefits, et cetera, would add to that cost. Let me see if I can get this to where I want to go. For public utilities, we're looking to the addition of a second heavy equipment mechanic at the powerhouse. The city's 2018 electric study utility master plan recommended we hire people, and this was one of them, alongside our experienced employees. Oftentimes typically in public sector employment, you have to wait for the person who has a position to leave and then refill it. There's no crossover, there's no training, those types of things they're trying to wrestle with, and that they would be able to do more of the work in-house and keeping the equipment better tracked, better reported, better scheduled for maintenance and repairs. So I support that one. Fire and EMS, you see they're requesting three positions, two firefighters, and one administrative assistant. We have four full-time paid fire people. I recognize that we were a department that relied heavily on volunteers. Volunteerism has changed over the years. Newer generations don't volunteer, and the older ones have been volunteering and done their time. There's definitely a philosophical gap here. Yet we remain an island that's self-sufficient. We don't have mutual aid agreements with anybody. We don't have a county. We don't have a borough. We don't have another island that's going to rush over here and help us in an emergency. It's us. And for an island that's 5,000 people, 43,000 people, that doubles with all the industry we have here. And maybe two of them are off on vacation because there are people too. That's an issue for me. We lost an administrative assistant at the time that this whole fire and police split up. And I remember the continuous statement was that there'd be no additional costs. I don't remember ever being a strategy to address that since. The work has grown. The kind of things that have to happen to stay a fire department and stay, keep our credentials, et cetera, and be on their own have increased. So I support that person in that position request. I think if I get this to work, that's all of them, unless I missed one because my computer is jumping around. Right? Police, or excuse me, fire, public works, public utilities, and PCR. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Tungo.
Can I request, you got the copy of the open position we got? Can we put it up there, please?
I beg your pardon?
Open position that we have, is it possible to put it up there? What we got, open position.
Oh, the number of open positions, yes. I'm sorry. Hold on. Can you pick that up? How am I doing? Okay. Was there a question for me?
No.
Okay, I'm waiting with bated breath, and the public is wondering if the radio went out.
I'm just trying to match what this request compared to what we got on the opening position that we got in there. On the firefighters. When's the last time we tried to recruit and have a signing draft for volunteers?
See if Ben's available. I believe Ben Knowles, our fire chief, is attending via Zoom. I've asked Karen to open his gateway so he can speak.
Yeah.
Ben?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Councilmember Tungo, could you restate the question? I apologize. You were broken.
When is the last time you guys try and do our advertised recruitment in a way where it's everybody's aware, the whole town, where like a drive or something to be signing up somebody?
Yeah, so we actively recruit. As you go into common areas, we put up posters. It's been kind of one of our initiatives to make sure that all the literature is updated. As far as like a drive of some sort, I believe the last one was held at Unicy, in the entrance way to the galley. And I think Karen, would you mind putting up the document? I just don't want to get the numbers wrong. I believe it was the last 13 applications of the last 13 applications we've received, from those events, all but two of them did not have driver's licenses. So two people had driver's licenses out of the 13. And of the two that did have driver's licenses, their availability was only 2 days a week. And that was those 13 were probably all within the last 6 to 8 months.
I know how important these positions are, but, I know it, a lot of changes. I volunteered for over 10 years with the fire department. But most of the people that volunteered in there usually work for the city too, you know, up of it for more than 20 to 30 people that volunteers. Half of them work for the city. Did we ever approach a lot of the city, especially with towards public works? And have we approached anybody in there for volunteers?
We did actually twice during council. We made an initiative to garner support, create a program where folks from Public Works were able to leave during work hours. That was unsuccessful. And since we've had a change of new administration, we have not. I think I want to just point out that regardless of this increase in staff, this would not change our attention to recruitment of volunteers. Two additional career firefighters and one additional administrative assistant does not fix the need for more staffing. So that will always be something that we will be focusing on continually. These positions really help the foundation of the fire department. Our volunteers that we have now are burnt out. It's tiring. And I know there's a couple of you that sit on council that have put your time in. We've made a lot of effort and strides forward. We have had extremely profound incidences that have affected our community. And it's really, my focus is to try and drive up our quality of care that we provide. And this is a small step forward to that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Councilman Luby.
So if we look at the lifeguards, they don't really cost the city much money. They're at an hourly wage. There's no benefits included. And so that one seems like a pretty easy one. My question, I guess, would be that Roger says that he's only allowed to hire 10 lifeguards. We have 172 FTEs, full-time employees, correct? And I have the flow chart of all the departments when I came on council, and it says he should have 15 lifeguards, which one I believe is a head lifeguard, and 14 regular lifeguards. So I'm confused by you can only hire 10, and those are part-timers, not full-timers. So I'm curious why it's only 10.
A few years ago, we dropped that number down to 10. With one head lifeguard, so it'd be 11. And if we had 10 people there all the time working 10 to 15 hours a week, it'd work fine. But the people we're hiring, especially the high school people, we've hired some adults too, but the high school people, the people that are lifeguards are usually athletic and in a bunch of athletic programs. So what happens is like this last week, we had, I don't know how many lifeguards were out, but they were all doing basketball. And so couldn't work the rest of them. I could work a couple of them, 25 hours, but it wasn't enough to cover all the shifts. And so if I can work, have another three lifeguards that'll work just a little bit of time. So I'm not working them 10 because their schedules are all, I got school, I've got sports. I can only put in 3 hours a week this week.
So what I'm hearing is that you need lots of part-timers and not people that can work lots. So to me, you have that already because you could hire 31 employees to work 4 hours shifts and you would still be in with your full-time employees.
Yeah, we could do that, except it would mess up PERS and workman's comp.
Do they get PERS? The part-timers.
Well, I don't know. It's workman's comp. There's taxes. There's some issues about every person we hire. There's some taxes that have to be paid. Uh-huh. And so it's not a lot.
So the payroll taxes and the workman's comp are based on the hours that they work in their wages. And it isn't a lot. You're right. I don't think hiring a bunch of part-timers would affect that. That I know of, it shouldn't.
It's the position count.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. If you have 14 FTEs that are allocated. You do, because unless, where did they go?
I don't have 14. I only have 10. That's why I'm asking for three more.
I don't know how old that sheet is, Councilwoman. I'll have to get a number back to you.
This is since I've been, it was 3 years ago, and we haven't changed anything. And that's part of your 172 count, because I added them all up. So somewhere there's some FTEs missing.
I don't need to ask
more. And so, well, and that's just my question, is why I don't feel like you need to have more, because I think you have it.
And if I do, absolutely wonderful. I'm perfect. There.
Okay. That was that was the one for that. And the interns, and this goes just in interns all the way around in the whole, within the whole city. I think that's an awesome idea. And I love the idea of interns. It helps the city financially. It's not a huge cost, again, because of the benefits. It's very beneficial for the city. It's very beneficial for the community and the kids. Gives them work experience. I think that we should come up with an actual internship program citywide. And I'm kind of, if other council members are up for it, I would make a directive to the city manager to come up with an internship program, if that would, you know, help alleviate that stuff. But that's all I had on that was my thing on the lifeguards there, is I felt like you actually had that already. And I'll let someone else talk there, so the fire department, I do believe they need help. I think that the firefighters that they have is not enough to cover 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And for as long as I've been here, which is, you know, over 30 years, it's been a while, and we have relied on, the whole department used to be volunteer, but that isn't the case anymore. And the younger generation does not volunteer like we used to, you know, back in the day. So I don't think they can count on that. And so I feel like if anybody needs extra staff, they would. I would hope that you would look at your 172 FTEs and see if there's some out there that are, you know, are they all being used? Where can you shift from one department to another? You just kind of mentioned that with planning, that you loaned that out. Well, maybe we can look at that as well, and then it doesn't cost extra money for the city. You know, and that would also work with the, I don't know if that would work with the power department, but I would look at all the departments, actually, and just kind of make sure that there's no FTEs out there not being used. So, okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'll make a few comments here on some of these. I would say that as far as the PCR positions that are being asked for, and I think those are no-brainers. They're well within that budget, and I think they're smart decisions. Let's see. I was looking at this, and you know, it's obviously going to be increases in all these budgets. The heavy equipment mechanic, I think that, you know, is a little bit different comparison, because that's in a proprietary fund. That is a healthy fund. And I think, you know, getting a complete picture of where that fund is at, and the impact of, we're looking at the estimate here is $162,000 a year, how that impacts that fund over time. Taking into account either, you know, if we do have a slowdown, if our revenues do dip dramatically in the next few years, you know, is that going to be a smart decision at this point? I understand the need for it. I think we're probably going to see more, you know, I don't know if, you know, how far they can get these employees can get into infrastructure and distribution also. But I know there's definitely some upgrades and a lot of work that needs to be done there at the powerhouse. That one, I'm kind of on the fence. I could see funding that one a little easier than I can some of the other ones. The groundskeeper position, or actually it was a maintenance mechanic one position. Does that, from what I've seen, just a, you know, an observation, seeing the groundskeepers work, they do a lot of work during the summer. If we replace those two positions with one person, does that put a lot more work on that person, or are we still going to need some temporary work or employees during the summer months when a lot of that, you know, that work happens? I guess I'll pose that question out there.
It's my understanding that we'll leave the temporary working program behind and move to this person because they're having trouble keeping temp workers in those positions. So it's, in my understanding, it's more stable to have someone that they can regularly get, they work all year long out of. I know down there, even in facilities, for example, you know, there's always more to do in the winter than they can get to, for example. So I don't think that there's a shortage of work. It's just how is it deployed? And if there's not a temp there filled, then somebody's sidewalks aren't getting done or whatever the, you know, third tier of the snow removal program is, or something in the parks that need mowed, et cetera.
So. Okay. It's just, yeah, I guess, you know, it could be reworked to where that workload is spread over a longer period of time instead of, you know, replacing the workload of two people with one person. Not very intuitive right off the bat, but it's not necessarily because you're eliminating two positions, you're kind of offsetting part of that cost, which then leads me into fire. And, you know, when that split happened, there was no real plan moving forward on how to do that. It was just, you know, oh, we got to split these, let's just do it. And the whole administrative assistant kind of became an offshoot of that lack of planning. I think it's been made clear, at least to me, that that is a necessary position that needs to be in that department. And I don't necessarily have much, you know, reservations about that. But the whole ask here, when you start out looking for two firefighters on top of that, is, you know, it's $420,000 a year. Are there other areas within that budget that cuts can be made to help pay for those positions? I guess looking at the overall budget, is there something that could be trimmed in there, trade off for those positions from something else? And it definitely would want to see a focus on trying to increase volunteerism, using different methods than what we have, or, you know, maybe, you know, thinking differently about how we recruit those volunteers kind of as a first step before we start putting full-time employees in there. We're kind of in the spot where we do have a fair amount of money right now, or we're in a healthy position. And as we go through all this stuff, it's just, I see more dollars, more dollars, more dollars. And by the time we're done, we're going to realize we've spent, you know, we've increased this budget by $5 million. Or, you know, between all the things that we're asking for, we're asking for a lot of money here. Between this and other changes throughout the city. And then the other thought that came to my mind here, looking at this, and you the city manager touched on it when he was talking about repositioning or redoing the planning department, doing kind of different roles. I've heard that suggested from the city manager in multiple different departments. And it might be helpful when we look at this to have an overall picture of what the plan is for the city as a whole. And is there a net increase in wages and number of people? Do we end up offsetting? And how is that going to affect the budget? It all comes back to are we affecting the budget? And obviously, we're going to have a lot more conversation with that. And as part of this conversation, I just want to touch on what, you know, someone else said here, is that, you know, we're going to look at the draft budget next on April 9th, and we're going to have a special meeting on the 8th. But approving the CMMP on the 9th we'll have just looked at the budget. And so I think those things go together along with, you know, this is all part of it. You know, what are the operating costs? So I think I've talked enough, but I think we'll let someone else get some thoughts from someone else here.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Anyone else? Bowman?
Well, since you asked. Okay, thank you. So facility maintenance, groundkeepers, temps go away. The maintenance, so just maintenance mechanic one, is that like a entry level? They're like a, you know, jack of all trades kind of a position. They, what are they specifically trained in? Is that just what they do? Other than cut grass and shovel snow.
Huh? I think I'm entry level. Let me see. Eric Hernandez, you have an answer for that? Or Scott?
No, I'm getting there. This is the, it says maintenance mechanic one for the facility maintenance.
I'm my mistake. I thought we were on the utility please. Person.
Yeah, it's not necessarily entry level, but it would be the lower levels of getting into that department. And I just want to clarify, our problem with it is that we can only retain one person, even though we have two temps. What we end up doing is really only filling one of those positions, and then the other one rides, and then that one ends because of the restrictions on that temporary work. Mm-hmm. So we either have to use that same person and try to get him for the second half of that temporary position. The issue is, or what we'll get is a full-time person, or I mean, a person that would take that for that full six-month term, and then we'll work with the graduating or the school kids that are coming back. But what happens with that is they can't fulfill their whole commitment because they're either out of school, getting ready to go to college. So we get a couple months and then they leave, and we still have 3 or 4 months left on their position. And so we can't fill it. So essentially we're just filling one of those positions. So it wouldn't be to Councilmember Bell's comment. It wouldn't be that we're trying to get that same workload on one guy. We're just trying to get one guy to fill that whole role of that position. And that position assists with the groundkeeping in the summer and all our parks and all that. And then in the winter, it's their general laborer and as well doing the snow removals and keeping our buildings safe and clear. They also support the facility maintenance staff at times too as well. Hopefully that answered what you're looking for.
So we're going from unskilled to semi-skilled.
I have a hard time calling them unskilled labor, okay? Yes. They're all part of the team.
Essential workers. I agree. Okay. Sorry. Thank you. I don't have any on that one. But hang on, because I've got, I'm not sure this one. So let's just, while you're here, heavy equipment mechanic. So the, or maybe this be for Mr. Hernandez, the city manager, sorry. So the thought is that you can start doing, if you have a heavy equipment mechanic, you can start working on some of these rebuilds in-house instead of hiring them out, which is what we have normally done or not. This, from what I sort of took from this, is that they can start, they're skilled and they'll be able to do some of this work and take the burden off of having contractors come in?
Partly. So there's some of the work that can be completed in-house, but it's mostly like plug-and-play work. So we can send a head out to a company like Wartsil or NC to be rebuilt and sent back that the powerhouse crew can install. But the actual machining of the head and actually rebuilding it should be done by NC or CAT or Wartsil, the company that makes it.
So then when we have rebuilt,
Correct.
Genset rebuilt. So that's the money that you used to send out the parts to the company, and that comes back. That has nothing to do with the labor to reinstall and to get it back on.
So with limited workforce, we would have to hire Wart Sail or Cat to actually do the work and fly out and install it.
But this person is staff. The plan to train to you alleviate those costs that you would normally have for flying somebody out to install it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. So the firefighters, volunteers, if somebody can answer me on this one, the trend on the volunteerism, like in the last 10 years, I know the comment was made that we only have 7 on the roster. I don't know if that's 7 active or 7 actually on the roster only, because those numbers can be very much different. But I was just wondering what the trend has been for 10 years now.
Yeah, I can. So we have 9 members on the roster, 7 are active. 2 of the other 2 are away at college. And so when they come back, we keep them on the roster so that they can respond with us. And the trend has been downwards. It's been up and down. COVID was really a big turning point for us. We lost a lot of folks during COVID. And I think, I've only been here for 6 years, but what I'm finding is there's this trend of, we get people up to status where they can actually provide care on a licensed ambulance service. So at an EMT level 1 or above, or go interior on a fire and be a state certified firefighter. And then shortly after that, we lose them. So I think I had mentioned in my memo that, we spent quite a bit of time training 20 plus folks to EMT or firefighter 1 level statuses. And we only have 2 of those remaining on our roster. And we have done that free of charge as a outside of the box type of recruitment tool. Unfortunately, we just have not had a lot of success retaining those folks.
Okay. Sounds like used to be the police. Used to be that way. Train them and they leave. So the administrative. Okay. So then let me, your organizational chart, you have fire chief, 2 captains, and 2 firefighters currently.
That's correct.
And these 2 will be firefighter entry level that we
that's correct
would train
come trained yes ma'am
firefighter 1 and at least EMT 1
yes ma'am.
The administrative assistant, when we discussed this a couple, probably 3 years ago, don't remember, it wasn't a 40-hour job. I don't know, how is it a 40-hour a week job now?
I can't speak to what was said before, but I can tell you that there's a lot of things that the fire department has not done a good job of historically. Prevention, education, pre-incident planning, hazard mitigation, you name it. There's things that we just have either put to the wayside or have never focused on. This admin position would come in and help alleviate a lot of the administrative duties to reporting. As well as, maintaining certification records for our folks, maintaining ambulance certifications. There's a number of things that we have found recently and identified as major deficiencies or disparities to the department, and we're trying to fix. But as you can imagine, with myself being really the only administrative person there, the trickle-down effect takes over and diminishes the level of which the captains and firefighters can spend on training and focusing with the volunteers and operational level stuff. And so we're really getting bogged down.
Would that position be Title 3 or PS?
Title 3.
Whatever the PSEA. Okay. Thank you. So just a final comment here, and I'm just going to take note of the memo last sentence, because really, for me, this is what it, I mean, staff can come forward with recommendations. They should know what they need and what they don't need, I would hope. But it comes down to budget. It seriously always comes down to budget. And the comment here is about it. With these, you can still present a balanced budget. So just to be clear, my definition of a balanced budget is that expenses out will not exceed revenue in for that fiscal year. So that's what I, when I say a balanced budget, that's what I want to see. And if you're having to pull from the appropriated balance fund or anything else, that's not sustainable, and that's not what I consider a balanced budget. So that's what I would hope to see come budget time. So, you know, even with staff increases and new labor contracts coming up and the increase in our Title III and all these increases coming down, so that's kind of my final verdict on that is, you know, that's, I mean, really what it boils down to on anything. How do we pay for it? So whether it's a human asset or a, you know, tangible property asset, project, can we pay for it? And can we pay for it over the long run? So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Anyone else? Comments from the council? Councilman Bell?
I apologize. I probably could have asked these ahead of time, but just two quick questions. On the page here where it talks about, where it shows all the costs of these employees and their benefits, what items are added in there? You look at the very first line under firefighter, and it says the $63,000 in benefits.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to get to that page.
Yes, it is. It says council packet page 86.
Can you restate the question, Councilman Bell?
Where it shows benefits there, say the first line there, the first firefighter line where it shows $63,000 in benefits. What other items are added into that? I thought the benefit package was somewhere around the $35,000 a year. I guess that's a question that doesn't necessarily need to be answered now, but it, you know, we do need to have accurate numbers when we start looking at these, and I'm just not sure what all is included in that. And then one other quick question with this is the heavy equipment mechanic for the powerhouse. Is that expected to be like a journeyman level mechanic?
I thought that that we addressed that the mechanic was moderately skilled. Isn't that kind of the word we used? I'm not really sure. I just get the two mixed up. Sorry.
I'm not sure. I'm just asking.
I'll have to ask. Because, I'm not sure.
That can be answered later, too. It makes a difference in when you look at wages and who you're going to be able to attract to that position, especially if you want them to do, you know, major teardowns, engines, and that type of stuff. So you're definitely going to be looking at a journeyman-type mechanic, so. Thank you.
Councilmember Bell, if I could, just speaking to the 63,000, if you look at the fire department memo, it's broken down for total benefits, $63,489.61, health insurance, PERS, FICA, Medicaid, AES, and workers' comp.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I do want to just make a comment that thank you for putting all of the benefits in there and making a total package. I appreciate that because that was one piece that we've seems like we've always missed. So thank you very much for adding that in there.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments from council? We will see this again, as mentioned, on April 8th and 9th. This time, we'll now receive public comments for additional staff position requests. Anyone in the chambers wish to speak, state your name. You have 3 minutes.
Mayor and Council, thank you for having us and discussing this item. My name is Tom Schurfos. When I'm not working in the planning office, I proudly volunteer for the fire department. I am also the president of the Onalaska chapter of the ASFA. I wrote a letter, and we'll just kind of go through it. So I'm writing to you today as a concerned citizen and a seven plus year volunteer. I'd like to express my cautious support for the proposal to increase the ranks of the paid staff of our fire department to include two full-time firefighters and full support for a department administrator. I want to be clear that I trust the judgment and plan that Chief Knowles is putting forward. It is clear that the fire department is in need of administrative support, project and emergency management, and grant support, but I do wish to ensure the future of volunteer membership. Since joining in 2016, I've seen significant swings in volunteer staffing. In good times, there's been enough volunteers to justify working in shifts. In lean times, as few as five or less. It's no secret that volunteerism is down nationwide, and Unalaska is not immune to these swings in support. People move on to this from this island on a regular basis. They get promoted and have less time. There are fewer volunteers to share the load, and they end up burning out. Moreover, the consistent turnover presents a challenging environment. Learning to work with new crews and wildly varying levels of certifications on a regular basis does take its toll. Despite these challenges, there's a unique passion in the volunteer corps. The current corps of volunteers has a significant amount of tenure, ranging from 3 to over 20 years. Some have come to the department with external experience. Others have started as cadets from our very own high school. These individuals have shown that Unalaska is capable of producing local, compassionate care with deep ties to the community. Considering all this, I believe that it is time to expand the paid staffing at the station. Our chief and firefighters deserve the office support that every other department enjoys. There are clear needs for an administrator position that manages the office during callouts, provides purchasing and travel support, but also does more, such as assisting plan review for new construction, coordination with outside departments and agencies, and many other support duties. Frankly, as an administrator, that might not be a sufficient title and step for that position. The highly industrial nature of this town requires significant time and effort in pre-incident planning, regulatory investigation, and public outreach. The additional firefighter positions will be able to further support the department as our needs evolve and grow as a community. Ultimately, I urge the council, the manager, and the current and future fire chiefs to be mindful of the Unalaska City Code, which requires the chief to maintain volunteer staffing as the department grows. Consequently, I urge council to consider the needs of the fire department and add staff to continue its mission to educate, protect, support, and serve this community. The fact that we are a combined department of paid and volunteer staff makes our fire department stronger overall. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Hi, my name is Greg Peters. I'm a volunteer with the fire department as well. Most of what I was going to say has already been covered, so I'll just hit a couple highlights. Volunteerism is down. We just don't have enough to cover everything. And with the paid staff, and if anybody's out of town on vacation, sometimes we just don't have enough, especially if there's a major incident that comes, if there's a structure fire or a multi-casualty event, there's just not enough. The safety of the responders and the citizens are at stake, because anytime you send a couple people in, you have to have a couple people outside getting ready to pull them out in case there's a problem. And that puts us all at risk. So, and in addition to that, if we were somewhere else, most of the country, they have mutual aid agreements with other nearby towns. We don't have that option here. So we're it. If there's any problems, we have to take care of it ourselves. So that's it. I fully support the suggestion of increasing the number of firefighters and administrative assistant. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mayor and Council, my name is Dave Gibson. I'm a captain for the Unalaska Fire Department. And just kind of listening to some of the things that people are talking about, it's disheartening a lot of times for me. Just last week, I was at the grocery store, and I had three individuals come up to me and ask me if the fire department was hiring and how they could help. And so I started the conversation about volunteering, and they're immediately turned off because they want a full-time job. The people of this community, it's a working community. We all know that. And it's hard to find volunteers. I have been one of the people that have taught the last 23 individuals, and the amount of hours that we ask our volunteers to put into our service is extremely high. And it takes time to get those volunteers up to a level where they're capable of responding to an incident. And unfortunately, life happens and people move away, and they get busy with their full-time jobs and things like that. I started as a volunteer before I became a full-time firefighter, and it's exhausting. It's mentally, physically demanding. Those of you that were volunteers at one point in time, I know some of you were. It's tiring, and a lot of our people are getting tired, and it's hard to continue down this path. The amount of training that is required for our positions is a lot. We have two people out currently doing training, and we have one person that's on vacation. And so right now there's me and another person as full-time staff, and we're trying to keep everything together. And it's one of those things where we have to do that training. And so I would encourage you to strongly consider adding additional people. I think in the last 2 years, we've done a lot of things. We looked through Chief Knowles' memo there in terms of pre-incident plans to try to become better prepared. That has helped me personally a lot in terms of understanding the potential problems in this community that could arise. And so, yeah, I just encourage you to strongly consider adding those additional staff. It's needed, and I think you'll get your money's worth by investing in the fire department. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, Council, my name is Doug Bartle. I'm one of the on-call providers at the IFHS clinic. I'm just here for the season, so I'm not a permanent resident. My comments are my own. I don't represent any organization, but I do call 5 nights a week, and I think probably more than anyone else working at the clinic, I interact and interface with these volunteers. And I just want to say it's the same 3 to 4 faces each time. You have the 3 to 4 volunteers, you have your full-time staff, and then the safety and the welfare of this entire community are falling on the backs of about the same 3 or 4 guys. 3 of them are here tonight. So, and those aren't young spring chicken backs either. No offense, guys. So, I can see, you know, when we answer calls 2, 3, 4 in the morning, the toll it takes on these gentlemen. I just want you to think about the size of your community, the amount of people that they're serving, and the amount of relief it really put on the community to maybe expand that personnel roster. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, City Council. My name is Salvador. I've been volunteering for the department for a little over 22, 23 years. So some of the City Council members I did see under my beginning time. And I can assure you guys that what the department have done in the last few years is amazing. There have been considerably big change on firefighting planning with business that we didn't do on the past 10, 15 years. With that, it's a big help to the department because it gave them a lot of knowledge of what is it that the industry has or facility has or business have that before we didn't know. So That helps in the way there will be more prepared in the event of an emergency. That takes time. And the members that are or were members of the fire department in the past know how easy or how hard it is to fight a fire during the winter months. When the fire is hot and going, it's awesome. You're not cold. But when the fire is out, you get to the point you're even cramping on your hands. It is so cold. But you still got to keep going because there ain't no more volunteers. There's very few of us. So the need is great. Unfortunately, it's easy to say when things appear not to be nothing wrong, life is easy, but that's not true. That takes time and effort to make sure that things are happening and somebody's keeping an eye on the community, make sure that our safety rules and relations are followed, systems are maintained, and that takes time and effort. And there have been ups and downs through the time, like you guys probably saw during you guys' time, the ones who were volunteered. We went through one of probably the lowest point at times at this point, but we're still pressing forward. And I mean, willing to get up at any time at night for any event or emergency. And I wish you guys really think seriously of the consequences on the few people or the support that this community really needs. There are a lot of needs, but being a volunteer is hard. And I wish the city will try to encourage their employees to participate so you guys can see how much participation you will get from your own employees. Very hard. But look at it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Any further comments from chambers? Hearing none, I'll ask for telephone or Zoom comments.
Yes, Mayor, I have a written comment and I have somebody from Zoom, Ms. Denise Rankin.
Well, okay.
Good evening. Denise Rankin. I'm a long-term community member and a homeowner, and I just want to echo a lot of what has already been said in support of retaining more employment for the fire department. I really appreciate what Chief Knowles and his team have been doing for the community. I know that volunteerism is hard to come by right now for people and that burnout is a real concern. I also appreciate, on behalf of OC, the work that Chief Knowles' team is doing in preventative controls. He inspected a lot of our properties with his team, and that's time consuming, but it was so worth it. And if they could do that for other businesses on the island, it would just be a plus. But I'm sure they would enjoy having more employees to be able to do that type of work. I also like the fact that you're looking at hiring full-time groundskeepers. It is a lot of work to try to retain for the summer staffing, but I hope that you continue working with bringing in college students for interns at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Denise. And you have a written comment?
Yes, Mayor.
Clerk.
Yes, Mayor. Let me just start the clock here. This one is from Mr. Ferdinand Lopez. Dear Mayor Vincent Tudyakov and members of the City Council, I hope this letter finds you well. My name is Ferdinand Lopez, and I proudly serve as a volunteer firefighter with the City of Unalaska. I am writing to you today as both a concerned citizen and a dedicated member of our firefighting community to express my heartfelt support for the proposal to augment our fire department with additional full-time staff, an administrative position, and two firefighter roles. As someone who works as an industry partner for the seafood sector and as a firefighter, I have seen firsthand how vital it is to take proactive measures such as education, prevention, and timely response to ensure the safety of our community. However, with our current staffing levels, it has become increasingly challenging to allocate sufficient time and resources to these important aspects. By investing in additional full-time personnel, we can strengthen our efforts to educate and empower our community to prevent emergencies before they occur. One of the most significant challenges we face as volunteer firefighters is the constant turnover within our ranks. While we are passionate about serving our community, the reality is that many volunteers eventually move on due to various life circumstances. This turnover not only disrupts our operations, but also results in a continuous cycle of training new recruits, a process that consumes valuable time and resources. Moreover, our pool of volunteer firefighters is unfortunately not as extensive as we would hope. As a result, there are instances where we struggle to adequately staff our department, leaving gaps in our emergency response capabilities. The addition of full-time staff would provide much-needed stability and ensure that our community receives the prompt and effective assistance it deserves during times of crisis. It's essential to emphasize that the prospect of increased full-time staff is not met with apprehension among us volunteers. On the contrary, we wholeheartedly welcome the idea, as it would alleviate some of the burdens we currently face and allow us to work more cohesively as a team. Knowing that we have permanent support at hand would undoubtedly boost morale and enhance our collective ability to serve and protect our fellow residents. In closing, I implore you to give serious considerations to the proposal to expand our fire department personnel. By doing so, we not only strengthen our firefighting capabilities, but also reaffirm our commitment to ensuring the safety and well-being of every member of our community. Thank you for your time, attention, and unwavering dedication to the betterment of Unalaska. Warm regards, Ferdinand Ferdy Lopez, Safety Security Manager for Unicy Inc. and EMS Firefighter Volunteer.
Thank you, City Clerk, for reading a letter from Ferdinand Lopez. Before we move on, I want to thank all the people who have stepped up to speak in support of the PCR, Fire Department, Firehouse, and Public Works. These are all important services that we provide in the community, and all of them are very important, I understand. But as you've heard comments early on by council members, it's going to be the bottom line in a lot of instances to determine whether we get two or you get one, or you get three, you want three and you only get one. But that doesn't mean that we won't fill it at the time we can. I think it's a responsibility of the council to always look at what is needed in this community and try to help to fill those positions. All of them are important, and I think we'll do that again. We'll go through this budget process on special meeting on the 8th, and then again on a regular meeting on the 9th. So I appreciate the input. We'll move on now. The next item on our agenda is the proposal for IFHS clinic funding for FY25. I'll turn this over to the city manager at this time.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. In your packet, you have a memorandum prepared by the Finance Director and the Assistant City Manager. As I always state, I'm the Vice President on the board of IFHS, and I worked diligently to keep an arm's length from this issue, and I thank them for their service in preparing what is before you. I think you've had presentations from the CEO, Noel Ray, and expressing what the clinic has been experiencing over time, the kind of improvements that clinic is putting forth to correct the course that it's been on and maintain its services to our community for another 50 years. So, the staff is proposing to use revenue from the city's tobacco excise tax to fund the clinic's request. The revenue generated by the tobacco excise tax, which was adopted in 2021, was dedicated to the community support grant program for the benefit of public health programs or tobacco education and cessation. There's presently $1,139,266 available in that fund after budgeted expenditures for the current fiscal year are deducted. I'm open to any questions you have on this matter at this time.
Well, thank you, City Manager. Any comments or questions on this proposal from IFHS Clinic? Councilman Tungle and Councilman Coleman.
So if we pull that money on the tobacco excise tax, are we in compliance? We are we in line on the way we put the syntax or tobacco tax on there?
It's my understanding that both the Assistant City Manager and or Finance Director did consult on this issue to make sure that it is in line with the purposes of that excise tax.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman.
Wow, we had that much going on in there. Thought as well. And it's excise taxes. The budget revenue looks like it's falling short this year, but I don't know, since it's an excise tax when they buy and they don't, so I don't, as opposed to sales and, you know, number of people here. So looks like it's going to fall short of the 70, you know, 750,000, but that's just, you know, math. So when this was first, couple things, when this was first brought up, I don't think this was ever discussed using to excise this tobacco tax. Was it?
I think correct. I think that it was my task to Margie and Patricia to meet with the clinic, understand what the issues are. Obviously, I'm very familiar with them, but I wanted to have a arm's length and to task them with the how could, if the city chose to help fund this, and this is the revenues that they identified.
Right. This was after the directive, but correct, not after the initial, because the initial was a loan. Was, well, I suggested a loan, but then just take, you know, here, you know, 1.1 million.
Right.
So that those, this was never, so this is new. I'm encouraged by this, but I think it's a timing thing for me, because exactly this is what the money's for. And if there is no cessation program, then this is, you know, it goes to the, can go to the health for anybody grants. But we haven't had that process yet. I want to see it go through that process, because I know you're making some, you've seen the grant applications. We haven't seen the grant applications, and we haven't designated what they're going, you know, anybody who could qualify for this could get. So, I mean, I think it, and that's going to be happening soon. So I think, even though I would support this, I still think it needs to go through that process first, and then any applicants and requests be cleared then, and then whatever is left can then, you know, up to the council, can go out to the clinic and fulfill the rest.
Oh, remember, I think that this is a particularly unique request. It's basically one meeting in advance of when you're going to see the community support grant applications. I think whatever you do here, this is a work session item, has to come back. So you will see those requests pretty much paired up with the timing of this request.
And it was initially in their grant request, right? Like, their grant request is the 1.5.
I think.
Yeah. I haven't seen the grant, so right. I don't know.
Oh, remember, I'm the one that administered the community support grants for 5 years. I think I took them over from administration either my first or second year here. And so I remember when this came up, I think I remember even when we offered the community support program process for the COVID funding, we had no sort of process at all to take in applications. I'm concerned that, you know, we're continuing to add funds, excise taxes, et cetera, into a community support program. But really, the typical users of the community support program are all applying for our general fund dollars. They don't really qualify for these. Maybe APIA will. But we're I think there's one other fund, and maybe even one of you, it's not coming to my mind, we've lumped into the community support program. But it's really, but this was the vehicle for them to get a request to council. And that's what I recommended.
Thank you. Refresh my memory then. We divided those out. I looked at Ms. Lou because she was the one that was pretty much instrumental. They are divided. Because yes, you're right. We take a percentage of our general fund and it allocated to the grants program, and then this is the excise tax. But that process is all through grants. It's the same process. So we put those all together. Is that correct? Is that how we decided to do that?
That's kind of how we wanted to go. But it's still, every one of them has a different kind of way of figuring the funds. What maybe these are more calculated. Even the UVB and bed tax has different kind of sources and formulas.
Well, true. Well, thank you for letting me kind of talk that out a little bit. So anyway, so yeah, I think it seems a positive way to go than what we've discussed in the past. So, I don't really have anything else.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Who's next? Councilman Bell.
I think this was using tobacco tax ended up being a nice clean way to do this without dipping into the general fund and without really, when you look at what the asked for last year in the community grants, it doesn't affect that. I think those monies will still be there to fund those community or those nonprofits that we generally fund, and I think we'll be able to fully fund them. I guess my only comment here is that, and this would be a second request, is a financial review of the clinic. I don't know why it wasn't on this. This would have been the perfect spot to do that. But for those who've lived here in this community for a long time, have been through the years where, you know, the billing was not good. A bunch of accounts went to collections. Stuff went unbilled. There was a lot of accounts receivable hanging out. So just as our due diligence, we're talking about $1 million. That's not chump change, right? So we should have it put at least a commensurate amount of effort into making sure and belaying anybody's fears that, you know, that they don't have a bunch of accounts receivable. We're not, the clinic is not writing off a large amount of bad debt. There's not a bunch of billing that, you know, is hanging out there. Those type of things, you know, we need to be assured of before we just, you know, here's $1 million, write a check and away you go. Beyond that, I support this. I support the way this has been proposed. And I support it as a grant and not necessarily a loan. Alone, I don't think would satisfy the needs of what we need here. And I don't think it would help the clinic in the long run. So those are my only comments. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Anyone else? Council? Okay. I'll ask for, does anyone present wish to speak? If so, please go to the podium. You have 3 minutes. Two and a half. Take it off your time.
Dennis Robinson for the record. There's one question that I have not heard asked on this, and maybe I missed it in a previous meeting, but why is it? What causes that deficit? Because it's been an ongoing thing for many years. What exactly is it? What is that cost causer? Thank you.
Some of that, I think I could, the answer is that they don't have emergency room service type certification or where they could get more revenue. That was in the report. But that's not the only reason, other than I'd like to see a financial report also. Any further comments? Anybody in the gallery? Chambers? No, none. Zoom or? Telephone.
No one indicated that they wanted to speak.
Okay, thank you. I'll request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
I make a motion to go into a regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, second by Councilman Nicholson. We're out of work session at 9.07 p.m. Back into regular session. Hearing no objection, we're back in regular session. We're now on a regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda must sign up with City Clerk. First item is Resolution 2024-09, authorizing the city manager to enter into a project partnership agreement with the United States Army Corps of Engineers for the dredging of Illilouk Bay entrance channel to include payment of an estimated $8,644,000 for the construction and the amount equal to 10% to the total project cost estimated to be $3,457,600. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-09.
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-09.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, second by Councilman Tungo. I'll turn this over to the city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. And it is with regret this matter is on your agenda tonight because on March 18th, we held an emergency meeting trying to authorize this in time for a signing that was scheduled to happen rather quickly post our approval. And I think included in the language of the agreement was the obligation of 10% of total cost of the project. And when I say included in the language, that was in the contract that we had. And this is an Army Corps project. It's not our project. And two things, I think, kind of happen. One, it's not the typical process that we normally do. They have a different process. And number two, I assumed that I was in a better position to understand that process. When I saw the 10% language and I was in discussions with our attorney, I thought that everything had been discussed. Their process requires then for the resolution to be passed and then the whole contract go again for his review and make sure that the resolution includes everything. Well, I didn't understand that 10%. The mayor raised it. No offense, Mayor, but when you raised it and I hadn't seen it, I was like, wow, where is this 10% coming from? Because truly, this is not, and the whole time it has been a 75-25 project. It is not. It's a 65-35 project. We've been calling it a 75-25 project for all the years I've been here. Well, I've only been here seven. So, really, I owe you an apology. We tried to meet something at the last minute that was thrown at us, and we certainly wanted to be good partners, but I did not meet that test. So it's here before you again tonight, and I'm happy to try and answer any questions about either that debacle or how we move forward. I will tell you that the Corps has rescheduled the signing. It's for this Friday at 10:30 a.m. There'll be another virtual link that's sent out, and I hope you'll all be able to attend. And I'm happy to answer any questions if I can. Otherwise, my ports director, Peggy McLaughlin, is in the audience, and she has had subsequent meetings with the port about the issue so that we can iron out any waves that may have occurred.
Okay, thank you, City Manager. Any comments from Council on this resolution 2409? Councilman Bell?
Yes, have there been, I would assume there's been conversations with the Army Corps about this, whether it was either a misunderstanding or that they have changed their process throughout the years that this has been going on.
There have been, and actually Ms. McLaughlin was in Anchorage to have personal meetings with them. So Peggy, if I can ask you to add on to my brief explanation.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty sensitive situation.
The Army Corps of Engineers, this is a federal project. This is not a grant. Of course, this goes through the congressional process of approval of the project, approval of the funding. You as a council have lobbied over the last 6 or 7 years on behalf of this project. The process has not changed. The actual construction is 75-25. The 10%, it was identified in the initial chief's report post-feasibility, and that's part of the WRDA, the Water Water Resource Development Act. It's renewed every legislation. They renew it through legislation every 2 years, and that 10% is identified. And essentially, it acts as an administrative fee. So when we looked to approve the construction cost of the $8.6 million, they include the final cap of all the costs in that, which we didn't fund in the CMMP. That's to be funded in future budgets based on the overall cost of the project. So the 10% has always been identified. It was identified in the initial chief's report as it went through the various congressional approvals and congressional funding sources. We, as a city, did not link that in the final partnership agreement as a total cost of the project. Even though it was brought up on the record on the meeting on the 18th, legal counsel did not believe that there was enough discussion to authorize Mr. Homke to sign the agreement without having further discussion.
Thank you. All right. Do we have anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
I'll restate the motion to authorize passing of Resolution 2024-09, authorizing city manager into a enter into a project partnership agreement with the United States Army Corps of Engineers for the dredging of Iloilo Bay Entrance Channel to include payment of estimated $8,644,000 for the construction and amount equal to 10% of the total project cost, estimated to be $3,457,600. I'll request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
A roll call vote of 6-0, or 5-0, excuse me, one missing. With this vote, the council has adopted Resolution 2024-09. And there will be a signing on Friday. Request council if they want to attend. Resolution 2024 is the next item supporting the city grant application to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, due April 1st, 2024. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-10.
I move to adopt Resolution 2024-10.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Bell. I'll turn this over to the city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So this resolution will support the city's application for about $125 million to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the Climate Pollution Reduction Act grant, the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, together with our trilateral partners, Unalashka Corp and the Kawalongan Tribe. The application seeks to reduce climate pollution caused from generating electricity using diesel fuel. The application is due shortly here on April 1st.
Okay, thank you. Any comments, questions from council? Councilman Bell.
Sure. I'm going to support this resolution with some cautious optimism. We haven't got the money yet. This is just a grant application, but I think it's a vehicle that's going to move this, that has the potential to move this project, this geothermal project, in a direction that it can get completed. So, yeah, so I'll support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess for my part, I'll announce that I'm chairman of the board of the Unalaska Corporation, and I will receive no financial benefit from this grant. Councilman Tungle?
Me too. I'll be in full support of this. This is, I think this is a light at the end of the tunnel. I think it's more better. I mean, I feel a lot better getting this moving forward and seeing something get done. And it'll be good. I think this will be better for the community, the way it works between the trilateral going forward with this. And I'll be in full support of this. And I'm pretty sure it will work good for us, I hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Anyone else? Huh? No. Okay. I mean, Councilman Tungle. Excuse me. I'm rating it. Has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
Thank you. I'll restate the motion for prior to roll call vote. Resolution 2024-10, supporting City of Unalaska's grant application to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, due April 1st, 2024. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Thank you. With this vote of 5 yeses, the council has adopted Resolution 2024-10. The next item is council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives? If so, they need to have motion, second, and a roll call vote. Okay, this time I'll call for community input and announcements. This is a final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. Are there any further announcements in the chambers? Hearing none. Is there anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
They're all hung up? Okay. This time, I'll call for a motion to go into executive session, closed to the public. Councilman Bell?
I move to go into executive session to discuss 2 items. Number one, Brady versus City of Unalaska, to receive legal advice from an attorney regarding matters of pending or anticipated litigation. In addition to the mayor and city council members present in executive session, will be the city manager, deputy city manager, attorney Sam Severin, and insurance representative Kyle Harden, and to discuss possible real estate transaction, a matter that, if immediately disclosed, would tend to adversely affect the finances of the city. In addition to mayor and council members present in executive session will be city manager and deputy city manager.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Councilman Tungle. And we'll be in executive session at this time, 9:20 p.m.